days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Mr. Speaker, I came here to make sure our republic doesn't die by unanimous consent in an empty chamber, and I request a recorded vote.
Something rotten exploded in my old Kentucky home's 4th District, and the stench of foreign cash and rigged turnout proves Thomas Massey didn't lose. He was the subject of a foreign hostile takeover.
And this is an amazing fight because he's got $0 from AIPAC, and his opponent, who refuses to debate him or literally show up on the campaign trail, has got $9 billion from AIPAC and much more from that group. And the question is, can oligarchs buy an election with lies and no candidate?
He was a DEI coach to corporations to help them understand how to implement gender neutral language, using their pronouns, how to better have a gender fluid conversation style, how to make sure that they change their boards of directors. That's where he's been for the last 5 years. So tell me about your dairy farmer boy from Kentucky. I got nothing for it.
The constitutionalist with a 99% Freedom Index score who co-sponsored the Epstein Files Transparency Act grilled the DOJ on blackmail networks and dared say no to blank check Israel aid saw his raw votes jump 19% with younger Americans flooding to him.
And we know why young people are, and, you know, middle-aged people are against the next war, because we'd be the ones fighting it. They're trying to bring back the draft. Screw that. We're not going to fight some other country's wars, are we? No.
Yet, low-profile, basement-dwelling debate MIA Navy SEAL Ed Gowron magically surged ahead by 10,280 votes, almost exactly matching his 10,854 mail-in haul. Turnout actually doubled from 2024 in this sleepy off-year primary. Opposition votes exploded 357%. The energy and crowd difference between the Massey concession and Gowron's acceptance was miles apart. This was the 2020 mail-in playbook reloaded. Outraged Americans have followed the money straight to the culprits. Miriam Adelson and two other Jewish billionaires backed by AIPAC's dark money machine that dumped tens of millions into Gowron's war chest, making this the most expensive House primary in U.S. history to purge Massey for exposing their game. Israel outlets openly called it the most consequential Republican primary for Israel. Trump sent Pete Hegseth to campaign against him. Another first for the United States.
President Trump does not need more people in Washington who are trying to make a point, especially from his own party. He needs people willing to help him win, to vote with him when it matters the most.
America first. Thomas Massey becomes the face of that politically.
This civil war in the party has gotten so out of hand. They sent the Secretary of War to my district today to campaign against me. I don't think that's ever been done.
It's also illegal.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure, but it's insane. Like, we're in the middle of a war. Why should the Secretary of War come to Kentucky? I say it's because I'm harder to beat than Iran, and I don't even have a nuclear weapon.
The president trashed him publicly.
He was a bad guy. He deserved some.
And boomer voters 65 and older, glued to Fox regime media and the last remnants of our Social Security money, delivered the margin while every younger demographic rejected the forever war grift. Probability that this was stolen by those three billionaires and their lobby, in my opinion, near 100%. They didn't need to stuff every ballot when coordinated cash, mail-ins, and demographic targeting do the job. Foreign lobbies now openly auction congressional seats while taxpayers bleed for endless wars and America First is flushed down a golden toilet. The system just proved it's captured. No more illusions. Demand the SAVE Act, demand paper audits, enforce the 1938 Foreign Agents Registration Act. America's under foreign rule yet again. And a revolution is inevitable. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network.
So much silver, so much gold, so many politicians under my toes. I got my side making moves from the inside. Noah's flood, crude oil, mud, Moloch's chalice filled with children's blood. Bought the jury, bought the judge, got the whole White House filled with bugs. Paid off Congress behind closed doors, blackmailed senators with my whores. USA fighting my wars. Underage boys, we use them like toys. Young girls get pearls from pedophile goers.
If you want the money, you will do what we tell you.
And if you say no, we will simply just graves, we dig up. Elections, we rig up. Claim all our ops, so for anti-Semitism.
Christ is king.
That's illegal under our regime. Now kiss the wall, bitch, let me hear the goys sing.
We getting AIPAC money. We getting AIPAC money. We getting AIPAC money. We're getting AIPAC money. We're getting AIPAC money. We're getting AIPAC money. We're
Hold
getting
up.
AIPAC money.
Hold up.
We hold up.
Now, yo, let me just say a little thing about this. I wanna see your foreskin, I wanna be at your bris. I wanna be a vampire, let me suck on your dick. I wanna see politics, I want control. Wanna make you my slave, that's my ultimate goal. I wanna pick apart your culture, wanna make you my bitch. Is that a serious ass question? Red Eli Vissel's night? Have you not, what fuckers? And now I'm thinking about it.
Congratulations. You did it. You defeated America. You defeated the Patriots. You shoehorned in your utterly despicable DEI coach carpetbagger. Congratulations. You must feel good about yourself. Enjoy it. You know, round of applause for yourself. It'll be the last time ever, so enjoy it. Enjoy it while you can, because, that's the last time ever, and it's about to get real bad for you guys. So, you know, really enjoy it now. Revel in it now. Soak in the victory, you guys, because you had a lot of fun. You had a lot of fun, and this is, you know, humiliated a bunch of good people, you know, stole an election really in an incredible way. I mean, the amount of money you guys poured in, it's something to behold, really. It's astonishing, actually. So congratulations, AIPAC. Congratulations, Jews. Congratulations, Israel. You did it. You destroyed another good man whose only crime was not being fully submissive and subservient to you. Not that he was like an anti-Semite or anything, but just not fully a slave. So you've destroyed him. Congratulations. I hope he runs for president now. I'll be campaigning for him. So yes, folks, Thomas Massie lost yesterday. Rather unfortunate and rather unlikely. We have a lot of questions about how this came about. And put it simply, It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense, actually, how this could even come about. We'll bring you the numbers. We'll show you the charts and everything. But I believe we can go to clip number 16 here. Or actually, I think we'll go to 15 first. No, 16's right. Let's go to 16. This was Thomas Massie's watch party. He gave his concession speech there. I'll show you some clips from that. But let's just do a little compare and contrast from Thomas Massie's party to Ed Gowrain's party. And while this isn't, you know, representative necessarily, obviously, from the outcome of the election, I think it does say quite a bit. Not that, oh, look, Thomas Massie has, you know, slightly more young people there, but that Thomas Massie has an entire, you know, meeting hall filled with energetic activists supporting him, and Ed Gowrain's I guess you'd call it a party. I mean, it looks a little bit more like a lobby at a dentist, like a bunch of bored people kind of standing around, not sure what to do. It really is a comparison to make. Let's go first to clip number 16. Here's Massey, gigantic hotel room, packed to the brim, energetic, youthful, numerous. Now let's cut immediately to clip 15. Here's the Massey party and the Galrain party. It's in some sort of bar and a hotel lobby. And there's, I think I see a dozen. I think there's at least a dozen people there. There are dozens of us, I tell you. And the big empty space really echoes. The echoes are really something there in that big empty space. So look, is it, you know, I guess this isn't how you win elections. You don't actually win elections by having a bunch of motivated, you know, youthful people in the community actually supporting you. What you have is a bunch of AI lies fed to boomers through Fox News. That's what it takes to win an election now. And again, it just kind of doesn't make sense. It kind of doesn't make a lot of sense. The numbers don't really particularly make a lot of sense. And just the energy and enthusiasm, it just doesn't exist for Ed Galrain. And, of course, the fact is this was 100% the boomers' decision. This was a boomer election. The boomers, that is the people over 60 or over 65, are the only people that voted in favor of Ed Galrain. I guess there's just so many of them that they overwhelmed every other age block. From Nario Nawfal, Ed Galrain beat Thomas Massey in Kentucky's 4th Congressional District primary without winning a single age group under age 65. Seniors carried him across the finish line. Every other demographic voted for Massey. That's how powerful the 65-plus block has become in low turnout primaries. You don't actually need to win the room. You just need to own the one corner that actually shows up. Republican primary for Kentucky's 4th Congressional District poll. If the Republican primary for the House of Representatives was held today, who would you vote for? 18 to 29-year-olds went with Massey about 80%. 30 to 44-year-olds went by about 65%. 45 to 64, 53%. So all of these, majority for Thomas Massey. It was only the 65-plus who voted for Ed Galrain at 65% and Thomas Massey at 35. So thank you, boomers. Thanks, you freaking idiots. You know those ads were AI, right? Has anybody have your grandchildren explain AI to you, and then maybe you won't fall for it so much. And look, I know there's a lot of great boomers that listen to us. I'm obviously not talking about you, calm down, but the rest of your cohort, good Lord, I've never seen anything like it. The, I don't even know what you call it, self-importance of the boomers, the fact that our entire society basically exists to serve them and them alone. And we can get into some of the numbers, but you know, we literally spend like trillions and trillions of dollars just on Social Security and stuff, which cannot be cut. But of course, by the time I'm that age, probably won't exist. Somebody posted yesterday that the political stance of the average boomer is, in fact, that famous painting of the Titan eating his children. It's basically if you just picture a giant monster eating their own children because they think they taste good. That's basically where we're at with boomers. And it's very sad. It's very sad to see. This is from Calvin Froedge on X. So what, we're supposed to believe that a guy who only had 75 donations from Kentucky, an empty victory party, and nobody at his rallies managed to double turnout from 2024, plus get all 10,000 mail-in ballots, KY4, may have been outright fraud. Those numbers don't make any sense. I can't help but see this and go, is this why we didn't pass the SAVE Act? Like, are we going to pass the SAVE Act now? That would be perfect. Is like, as soon as this race happens, they're like, yeah, you know, let's go ahead and pass that SAVE Act now. We've been kicking the can down the road a little bit. I think it's time to finally do it. Yeah, there we go. This is, put this on your bumper stickers, boomers. You can replace the Trump sticker with this image. Is this Kronos eating his children? Is that right? So there you go. You are Kronos the Titan devouring your own children and thinking that your children are idiots for expecting not to be devoured. Yeah, it really is. It really is the worst. And I mean, the worst thing about it, there's got to be a movie scene. I'm picturing, like, isn't there a scene in Pinocchio where, like, all the kids that are going to be shipped off to the island to be turned into donkeys and put into slave labor? So maybe I'm thinking of a different movie, but it's like you're sitting there going, guys, you're being tricked. You're being fooled. You shouldn't get on the ship. You shouldn't go with these people. They're going to enslave you. And they're all on the ship like, see you later, idiot. You dummy. You thought it was going to be, you know, bad to be on the ship. But here we are on the ship going to the island of pleasure. So see you later, idiots. And we're like, okay, fine. Have fun. Enjoy yourself, you asses. You absolute asses. That's basically where we're at. Is I got a bunch of people going, yeah, you know, Thomas Massey lost. Sucks for you. It's like, no, it sucks for all of us. No, you have participated in the, you know, abject takeover of America by a foreign power. Why do you think this is going to go well for you ever? It really is sad. And look, there's a bunch of people online right now that are claiming this is about supporting Trump. They're bringing up the fact that Thomas Massey voted against, you know, big, ridiculous spending bills as if that's why he wasn't elected. No, he wasn't elected because the Jewish community in America targeted him for removal because he wasn't sufficiently pro-Israel or pro-whatever their pet causes were and are, which continue to be not just the war in Iran, but basically everything else negative that Trump is involved in. So let's go and go to clip number 35 now, because I don't want to come across as an anti-Semite, God forbid. So here's a Jewish person admitting it verbatim. Let's watch.
I think it is a good thing if Massey and the people like him and others believe that if you cross the line into anti-Semitism,
if you cross the Jews,
Jews are going to use the power that we have openly to go for you, because what other recourse is there? Are we just going to sit here and take it, beg for scraps, hope that nice people in, you know, are nice to us? The Democratic Party is going explicitly anti-Semitic. We can see it happening. People are getting benefits, as Seth says, for being anti-Semites. That seems to be part of an appeal in primaries to the left and the party. We have to use what means there are at our disposal. And in my view, and I'm going to put it blank, that is Jewish money. There is an enormous amount of Jewish money in politics, by which I mean Jewish donors, wildly disproportionate, not only charitably, but politically. And when I say charitably, I mean nobody really knows the numbers. Jews make up 2% of the population, according to some studies. Jews make up 20% of the charitable contributions made in the United States annually. That is a tenfold, think about that. Think about the disproportion of that. And in politics, it's pretty close also. And if that money isn't used, what? Why do people give money? Because they want to influence elections to get people elected who reflect their views. Well, this is an existential issue for Jews. And the Jews who explicitly give money because they want to make it clear to anti-Semitic candidates that they are going to have to go through a buzzsaw and that they are not going to simply waltz in and be, you know, be, if they're treated with kid gloves by the New York Times, we are double time going to do what we can to expose who they are, to find out what we can find out about them that will harm them, and that we will do what we can to prevent them from taking office. What other choice does American Jewry have?
You could stop being awful. Here's the first suggestion. Stop doing all of the stuff that hurts us and makes people dislike you. Do you notice how that never even enters in to the conversation? Because, again, it's got to be predicated on the concept that anti-Semitism is anybody disagreeing with the state of Israel, anybody criticizing Jewish people for any reason. and that that criticism or that outrage or whatever it is born from some corrupt aspect of European DNA. Therefore, it has no cause. It has no solution. It just is. It just exists. And so in that case, of course, the only thing you can do is try to snuff it out by, you know, using the endless Jewish money and influence over the press and the, you know, mainstream media to destroy that person's life as, of course, a symbol to everybody else. Right? He said that, right? Like, that clip is pretty amazing, to be honest with you. It's pretty amazing how he literally just lays out the thinking in a way that you only ever heard from, like, Nazis. Like, that's basically the Nazi description of how Jews control America, and he's just laying it out there verbatim, going, we use the incredible, you know, we use Jewish money to punish people for going against us, and we want everybody to know that opposing us, I think the metaphor he used was like going through a buzzsaw, right? Okay, so why would we allow this? Like, why are we allowing this? So again, John Poteretz, or whatever that guy's name is, just comes right out and says it. And again, there's a mental illness or something that's there, where Thomas Massey is just obviously not an anti-Semite in the first place. Like, I could even sort of understand, at least be more reasonable, if it was literally like, you know, if he was saying this about, you know, whoever, Dan Blitzerian, you know, say what you want about Dan Blitzerian. I think he'd be the first to say he's kind of an anti-Semite. Like, if it's somebody who's like literally all they do every day is just be like, Jews bad, Jews bad, then it's like, okay, that guy's an anti-Semite. Again, you're allowed to be an anti-Semite, and I think it's, you know, ridiculous that we have these ethnic loyalties dictating who gets elected in this country, and not to even throw Dan Blitzerian under the bus. Do you see what I'm saying? That they're treating Thomas Massie, who literally is just like, I don't vote for any foreign aid, and I don't like the war in Iran, and that's enough for them to treat him like an existential threat? It's a pathology, but it's a useful pathology. Because as he lays out there, the purpose is terror. It's terrorism, really. It's terrorism through the electoral process. It's meant to strike fear into the heart of other congresspeople, other congressmen and women, to tell them, you're going into the buzzsaw if you cross us. And crossing us doesn't have to be explicit. You don't have to be an explicit anti-Semite. Better safe than sorry, right? Better just go over and above to do what we want. That way you know you're safe, because even if you're choosing something, you know, on principle, even though you have no problem with Jewish people, but, you know, think that Israel's interest is at odds with America's interest, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If you oppose us, you will be destroyed. We'll go above and beyond. We will do it out in the open. Nobody's going to stop us. And, you know, we'll ruin your life. And hell, they'll kill you if that doesn't work, right? We saw the pressure brought against Charlie Kirk before he mysteriously died. You know, it was always a question whether Thomas Massie's wife died of natural causes. I think that, you know, is even more valid of speculation now, because that's what happened here. That's what happened with this Thomas Massie election, is that the Jewish Americans and the Jewish Israelis basically played their hand, showed their cards, and said, this is who we are, this is how we act, and are basically daring anybody to do anything about it. So that's a very big change from how it's been for my entire life. The same amount of power has always been wielded. The openness with which they are now using this power to destroy good people, it is deliberate. I know Alex was going off about this in the beginning of his show, and I thought he put it very well, that there is this, you know, deliberate feedback loop where they want to create anti-Semitism in order to, you know, get laws passed and that sort of thing. We'll get into some of the laws being passed right now. But I think you have to understand that it's about more than that. It really is a matter of psychological manipulation. And it all just goes down to humiliation. It's just humiliation. It's, we get to do whatever we want act in the most outrageous ways you can possibly imagine. I mean, I'll show you some videos today because we're going to talk about this all day. I mean, this is going to be the topic, more or less. We're going to be joined by Dr. Malone later to talk about ticks. But I think I'm going to be able to put into context what John Podoretz just said in terms of why they see the need to create terror to achieve their ends and how useful it is. Now, that is the deliberate purpose of this, to send a signal to everybody, you and I included, that they will be acting outrageously and they will be doing whatever the hell they want. And as I look at the world around today and all these things being, you know, implemented, I got to say, I think we've got 2 years. In fact, I'm like absolutely sure that we have 2 years and that everything that we're seeing happen right now is all in preparation for a global communist overthrow of Western governments to install essentially a Jewish super state over the entire world. I think that's what the data centers are being prepared for. I think that's what the digital ID is being prepared for. I think that's why the war in Iran happened. I think the shortages and the rationing plays into that. And as we know, and as has been, you know, talked about by the people doing it, they plan on May Day 2028 to do a general strike of every major union in the country to grind our economy to a total halt until they get the demands that they want, which include basically a total socialization, communization of our government. So that's about the timetable we're looking at. I mean, as you look around and you see all these things going into place and you hear all the stories about the elite preparing their bunkers and preparing to shut down, I think we're 2 years out of a full-on, like, culling of the human race. And I think that's the date to be established, May 1st, 2028. And I think if we make people aware of this and make people aware of how this is literally exactly 100% to the letter how communist revolutions happened in Russia and were attempted in Germany, then we can look at how those revolutions in the first case succeeded and the second case failed and learn how we can combat the new revolution that's coming in just under 2 years. Does that make sense to everybody? As you look around and you see things like the immigration camps being built, but no immigrants being put in there, the anti-Semitism bills quietly being passed in state offices, the ICE QRF force, the conflating of anti-Semitism with terrorism, the denaturalization of American citizens so they can be shipped off to prison camps. Do you see what I'm saying? Let's go over just a few of the questions people have about the election yesterday in Kentucky. We're supposed to believe that a guy who had only 75 donations in all of Kentucky somehow beat Thomas Massie, who had millions of donations throughout Kentucky. But I guess one $10 million donation outweighs $10 million $1 donations at the end of the day. Here are the total votes cast in the Republican primary for Kentucky's 4th congressional district. Thomas Massie was the incumbent in 2020 and 2024. In 2020, there were 84,000 total votes. In 2022, there were 66,000 total votes. 2024, 52,000 total votes. And in May 2026, 104,000 to 105,000 votes, meaning that between 2024, which was a election year, by the way, so of course you're going to get a higher turnout because people are going to vote for the president, somehow had about half as many vote totals as this primary. Now, it makes sense that the vote totals were up because this has been such a prominent race that so many people have gotten involved in and have tried to drive out the vote. But how many people are even in this Kentucky district? 104,000 votes in a primary for just the Republicans in a single district? That's absolutely astronomical. Of course, AIPAC's celebrating it. They're blatantly stealing elections right in front of our faces. This is from KY underscore statesman. There were twice as many ballots cast in KY04 yesterday than were cast in the 2024 primary. Okay, roughly double. Nothing suspicious about that. Massey loses after 2026 vote total more than doubles the 2024 total, once again showing the just unbelievably insane increase, 356.6% rise in the votes for the opposition to Massey. Nobody's buying Massey's election loss. AIPAC-funded opponent increases voter turnout by 357%. That's the story at alexjoneslive.com. That's alexjoneslive.com, the replacement site for InfoWars, from Kellen McBreen. In the wake of yesterday's Republican Thomas Massey's congressional election loss Tuesday, in the wake of Kentucky Republican Thomas Massey's congressional election loss Tuesday, millions of Americans are suspicious that the system rigged the vote in favor of his opponent, Ed Gowrain. A popular social media account run by former Utah Senate candidate Sam Parker posted data from the election showing the vote total for Massey versus Gowrain election doubled the 2024 totals. Furthermore, with Massey's turnout increased by 19%, Gowrain raked in nearly 357% more votes than the incumbent's last competitor. Did Massey get 2020'd? Massey increased voter turnout by 19% over 2024. Gowrain increased the opposition turnout by 357%. So again, what we're seeing is very, very, very reminiscent of 2020, like almost perfectly. The massive number of mail-in ballots, where apparently they almost all went to Ed Gowrain, and they were just enough to put him over the top and defeat Thomas Massey. Yeah, it's a little bit suspicious. And look, part of the point of talking about sort of the ruthlessness and the, you know, just always going over the top of the Jewish community here in America, like we just played with, you know, John Podoretz, is that they'll do stuff like this. Is that, like, what is out of, you know, an option? Like, this guy's like, we have no other option. We have to do this. Like, you know, they're in a mindset. And again, this is the consequence of trauma-based mind control programming that is done to little kids, little Jewish kids especially, from, like, the moment they're old enough to understand things. Again, it's something that I find utterly horrifying and inhuman as the father of a five-year-old to sit down with that five-year-old and show them, you know, videos of bulldozers shoving over dead bodies and go, this'll be you if the goy ever get in control again. It's like, good Lord. And again, we've, you know, talked about this over and over, where you have, you know, famous actresses giving interviews where she's like, at age seven, I was sleeping outside of my parents' bedroom door because I was afraid they would be taken in the middle of the night. So you have to understand that type of mental programming that is encouraged, like we talked about the other, what do they call it? Experiential learning, where at a Jewish camp, they brought all the kids out of bed in the middle of the night and told them Israel had been nuked just to terrify and horrify them. Before going, oh, actually, that was a lie, that they weren't nuked, but they could be. So always keep that in mind. You remember, even then, how powerful that programming is. Even the guy who wrote the, you know, posts talking about what an evil thing this was to do, himself was in the comments defending the people who did it. Went, well, but, you know, you have to understand, like, they thought they were doing something. And it's like, do you understand how powerful this brainwashing is? Do you understand that when we talk about, you know, Stockholm syndrome, like Alex was earlier today, the biggest victims are really the Jews who are traumatized like this and then utilized so that they think that Thomas Massey, just being a libertarian and not wanting to support a murderous regime in Israel, is somehow an existential threat that not just allows for and justifies, but in fact requires totally illegal, like over the top insane reactions. So like, just like that's where they're at. Okay. So I wish they weren't, wish they wouldn't do this, wish they would just chill and just not like speed run the destruction of America. Then nobody would have a problem with them. But remember, that can never be an option. It can't ever be their fault. It can't ever be anything they do. It couldn't possibly be because of exactly what John Podoretz is talking about. That's increasing anti-Semitism, right? For a guy to sit there and go, yeah, we use Jewish money to destroy Thomas Massey because we didn't like him. And that's what we Jews do. And we'll do it to you if you step out of line. And that was the lesson we were teaching them. You're going into a buzzsaw if you oppose us. Gee, why don't people like you? God, I wonder what it could possibly be. Where's all this coming from? Where's all this anti-Semitism coming from? you just admit to controlling our elections with money and destroying the lives of people who mildly disagree with you. What's wrong with that? Why don't people love you for that? It's insane. It's genuinely insane, which is also why I don't take any of the crocodile tears seriously, because they're actually concerned about, like, not being liked, then they wouldn't behave in the way that they are, right? Is this a complicated thing to understand? It's not. It's not that complicated. And they understand it fully well, obviously. So again, all right, we get the message. We get the message. Loud, you know, received. Message received. Loud and clear. We understand exactly what you're telling us, whether you intend to or not. We get it. I think we all get it now. Of course, AP News has the article, Trump's influence sways in Kentucky GOP primary as U.S. Rep. Massey beaten by Galbraith. Kentucky U.S. Representative. So, and this is the really good thing, is that it's so obvious and it's so over the top. And you have so many people like John Podoretz or like AIPAC, right? Like, you got this article here, or this post from AIPAC. Ed Gowron's victory in Kentucky and Clay Fuller's win in Georgia ensures two outspoken pro-Israel voices are positioned to fill seats previously held by outspoken detractors, Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Our community was proud to help pro-Israel candidates win these races. So the good thing about, like, having these people admitting exactly what was behind the loss of Thomas Massie is great, because now you can look at everybody else who's not saying that this is reason, who's saying that Trump is the reason, or Thomas Massie's votes against border security or whatever other crap they're lying about. It's just absolute confirmation that those people are lying to you, don't have your best interests in mind, and are covering up what they know to be true, meaning that they're a part of the Jewish cabal, I guess you could say. They're actually in service of the people who are buying out our politicians, okay? So that's what we know now. So now when you read the AP article that's like, yeah, Donald Trump really swayed this election, and they don't really mention all the money. They don't really mention all the tens of millions of dollars from the Israeli first oligarchs. Then you go, okay, so they're in on it too, because why would you ignore that? Because why wouldn't you make that the top of your reporting? Because you're lying on purpose. It's not that you don't know. Trump handpicked and endorsed Ed Gowron, whose victory demonstrated the president's influence over GOP voters and growing frustration with Massey's opposition to Trump. In recent weeks, several other Republicans have been defeated by Trump-endorsed challengers, including Senator Bill Cassidy in Louisiana and several Indiana state senators who defied him on redistricting. Massey, who served in Congress since 2012, was one of the most outspoken holdouts. He pushed for the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files, criticized the war in Iran, and voted against the president's signature tax legislation last year. Still, he tried to convince voters that they could be for both him and Trump. But no, we've learned. We understand now. The Republican Party is the party of Israel, and that's it, and that's all, and there's nothing more, nothing less. You can be in favor of transgender children and open borders and DEI. You can be as far left as Castro himself. But as long as you support Israel, you are a dyed red Republican. Alan Dershowitz is a Republican. Thomas Massie is not. You can, on the flip side, believe in every single conservative policy and be as far right as you can possibly be. But if you oppose Israel, you are a Democrat, you're a socialist, you're practically AOC. Now, similarly, it's the same playbook being run on the Republican Party that's now being run on America. See, at the end of this, the Republican Party will have given everything Israel wants to them, and then it will be destroyed. America is going to war with Iran in a way that will help to progress and achieve Israel's goal, but will, in fact, destroy America in the process. It's the same thing they're doing. It's the same thing, because they don't care, because they aren't Republican. Like, Alan Dershowitz is not a Republican and would be happy to see the Republican Party go down in flames and never, you know, get started again. So what does he do? He joins the Republican Party. You think he's doing that to bolster the Republicans? No, he's doing that to shatter and humiliate the Republicans and to shift what it means to be a Republican to one thing and one thing only, slavish support of Israel. It's sad that we're letting them do this, but this is what happens. Okay, so AP News is in on it. They're in on the Jewish conspiracy. More like AP Jews. Good one, crew. Yeah, this is how we're going to be from now on. It's like this was it. No, this was it. The Thomas Massie election, I think, was the final straw. Because you could have held out on, like, what is actually going on. You can try to desperately, you know, it's about something else. No, we got rid of the Harvard president because she plagiarized things. And no, we sold TikTok to Larry Ellison because China's bad. No, we're going to war with Iran because nuclear weapons, because they hate America. No, we got rid of Thomas Massie because he's against the border wall. It's like, okay, it's time we stop falling for any of this. It's time we stop falling for this already. And I'm looking at you, boomers. What the hell is wrong with you? Why are you such suckers? It's like, it's got to be. I mean, is it not humiliating? It's humiliating for us to watch you do this. Boomers are just, you know what boomers are? They're the most well-fed slaves in the world. They're the most well-fed, well-looked-after, pampered slaves the world has ever seen. And they are thrilled at their slavery. They really are. The boomer generation will stop at nothing until the country is fully raped and destroyed. This is from Nikki Rudd X on X. A steady diet of Fox News, Facebook memes, and megachurch sermons brought us here. It's a disgrace. So again, you can see that for every single age group, it was big time plus Massey. It's only the boomers that fell for Ed Gowrain. Again, it's really not even a question. Which is kind of the most insane thing about this, that Ed Gowrain was literally a DEI coach for corporations. He went around and trained corporations on how to discriminate against white people and Christians. And you just voted for him. He was a never Trumper. He literally left the Republican Party in 2016 as a protest against Donald Trump. So, you know, it's not like this was a, hey, both candidates are good or both candidates are bad. It's like, no, one candidate is just the dude and the other candidate is just a literal freaking puppet. It's crazy how obvious it is. But all this stuff is like this, which is what happens when people like get John Poteretz or whatever their name is. Like, you understand, it's why everything seems insane right now. It makes people insane because you have people out there just flagrantly, outright, obviously lying about things, and it makes people go insane. It genuinely does, because it's sort of constant. Like, you're sitting there and they're telling you Thomas Massie was ousted with Jewish money because he opposed what we want, and this was a lesson to other politicians that if they want to try to oppose us, we'll send the buzzsaw after them. And then you turn on TV and they're sitting there going, you're an anti-Semite if you think this was about anything other than Thomas Massie's opposition to the big beautiful bill. Doesn't it kind of make you feel insane? It's like gaslighting, but I don't even know if they know they're doing it. You know, gaslighting, I would think, would need some sort of, you know, purposefulness behind it. But in this case, I don't know if it's just a general insanity and a subjectivity that makes everything impossible to talk about. Because at the end of the day, that's sort of what the division is, objectivity versus subjectivity. Some people believe that the truth exists and it's out there and is real, and other people like to interpret absolutely everything through a lens of narcissism. And that's what makes everybody insane, because then you don't have truth. You have, you know, beliefs specifically for, you know, different situations that completely contradict each other, and yet, you know, they hold them with full sincerity. And it, you know, makes other people insane. It really does. Here's Sam Parker. Did Massie get 2020'd? Massie increased his turnout by 19%. Now, Ed Gowrain received 10,854 mail-in ballots tonight. Thomas Massie lost by 10,280 votes. And my question is, A, why do mail-in ballots exist? B, why would they ever exist for a primary contest? That is genuinely insane. And three, if they are going to exist, if we are going to have them for primaries, why do they make up a full quarter of the votes. Like, what we know about the mail-in ballot system that we have, because it has not been improved. It has not been upgraded. It has not been made more secure. And it hasn't been undone. It hasn't been reversed. The thing we know about the mail-in ballot program is that including mail-in ballots in the election count make that election insecure, unreliable, and the results should be thrown out, no matter what. Because mail-in ballots, you cannot confirm the person who name is on it actually sent it in. There's no way. There's no way to confirm it. There's absolutely no way to confirm that it isn't just a mail deliverer opening 10,000 envelopes and voting Galrain 10,000 times. How do you know it's not? What sort of controls do you have to guarantee that the person who cast the vote is the person whose name is on it? There is not one. It's impossible for there to be one, which is why it's a stupid thing to do and should never be allowed in the first place. A quarter or like a fifth of the entire vote were all mail-in ballots. Yeah, I'm suspicious. You know what we should do is we should go back and forensically audit the election. And what you'll find? You'll find that you have mail-in ballots and there's absolutely no way to confirm whether or not they were really sent to the person. Like, that's the point. You cannot ensure the chain of custody, so you shouldn't be able to count it. So, again, the people that we're talking about will literally defend murdering children in their cribs. Same mindset, same all or nothing, teach them a lesson mentality, right? Look what they can do to Gaza. Look what they can do to Thomas Massie. It's all the same thing. It's all the same mindset. It's all the same pressure points being hit. Again, AIPAC. Voters across America sent a resounding message tonight. They support Democratic and Republican candidates who view strong U.S.-Israel relationship as American interest and reject those who focus on attacking that alliance and pro-Israel Americans. AIPAC congratulates U.S. Navy SEAL Ed Galrain on his victory over Congressman Thomas Massie in Kentucky's 4th District. Basically, you know, bragging about the fact that they have 105 AIPAC-backed candidates and that basically they all win. They all always win. So again, not because they're good for America, not because they're good for the people, not because they have the support of the people in their district, but because they have the support of a couple billionaires who want to take over America for Israel, have taken over America for Israel and are now flaunting it and making it well known to everybody. And by the way, the person behind the AIPAC account is at 2A Harris. These election rigging operatives hate being dragged into light. They fear sunshine like vampires. This guy has since made his account private for some reason, locked it down, which is pretty interesting. Because why isn't he proud of? I mean, why would he not be proud of being the AIPAC guy? What's wrong with being the AIPAC guy? I wonder what he had on his profile. Maybe we can find like a archive of it. Like, I wonder what type of stuff he was saying on his personal account that maybe he doesn't want people knowing about the people who run AIPAC. I don't know. There you go. Adam Harris. Well done. Well done, traitor. Everybody involved should be arrested and deported. But it's actually more likely that they're gearing up to arrest and deport and or, you know, kill so-called anti-Semites. You know, people like Thomas Massie. I'm going to go to a few videos about this, including reactions from the likes of Nick Fuentes in the first five of the next hour. I got a lot of videos to get to today, but we can go just for a little taste, I guess you could say. We could go to clip number 10 here, because I don't know if you know this, but there was a flotilla that was attempting to reach Gaza and provide medical aid and food and things, because obviously Gaza, they're still being bombed, they're still being attacked, there's no real ceasefire there, they're still being cut off from humanitarian supplies. Because, of course, Israel is committing genocide there. And so a flotilla, a charitable flotilla, was trying to deliver aid to them. And this is the way Israel is treating the charity workers trying to feed starving people. Let's watch.
Free, free Palestine!
Check it.
There you go. And so this is Ben Gavir. who's like the defense minister or something. And he's literally parading these people around. They've got their hands cuffed behind their back, and they're being treated like terrorists. These people, all they have done is try to deliver food to starving people. Their entire crime is to be trying to carry out unapproved charity for the children and the women and the innocent people that Israel has not murdered, has not, you know, managed to murder quite yet. And so, like, you can hear a woman screaming. She's attacked. So, like, again, that's who we're dealing with here. These people aren't terrorists. They aren't supporting terrorists. They aren't bringing supplies to terrorists. They're doing a very public, you know, well-advertised stunt, basically, to prove how evil Israel is. And they're playing along with it perfectly. So, again, literal terrorist, dude. Who, I mean, there's videos of him, you know, walking and basically stepping on the Palestinian men, who, again, have never been charged with the crime, never been given a chance to, you know, argue their innocence, but they are blindfolded, stripped naked, hands behind their back, laid face down, while Ben-Gavir strides over them and talks about how, you know, they'll soon pass a law to murder all of them. Now, they have passed that law, so I wonder if all of the flotilla members for the crime of, you know, try. Yeah, he posted this, by the way. He posted that video. He's proud of it. Welcome to Israel, he says. They might be killed. Maybe they'll be given the death penalty, you know, bringing charity to starving children. Not if the Jews have anything to say about it. So, you know, what are we supposed to do? Ignore this? What are we supposed to do? Act like these people are good? Act like, well, in Israel, they're like that. But in America, look, all I know is I don't want to be handcuffed and left on a concrete floor. But that looks like where we're going. And when you've got them doing this in the full light of day, publishing the video on their own social media of them, like, literally arresting and torturing with noose pins on the charity workers who are trying to feed starving children, I think we've got to recognize, like, where we're at. Remember when Ben-Gavir and other Israeli politicians proudly wore a noose pin to celebrate murdering Palestinian prisoners? They've been trying to tell you who they are for a long time. Believe them. Believe them, you guys. They're very honest in their own way. It's time to believe them.
And so what does it say that a foreign country is able to spend $30 million in rural Kentucky to tell rural Kentuckians, no, we don't like your representative. We want a different one. The representative of the small town people of rural Kentucky is not supporting Israel's war in the Persian Gulf. So we veto that. We're going to come in with all these billionaire Jews from New York and LA and Miami. We're going to come in with all this billionaire Jewish money. These are people that have never set foot in Kentucky. They don't give a shit about Kentucky. They probably hate people from Kentucky. But they got deep pockets because they're institutional. They run the institutions that keep the global empire going. So they take their limitless resources, limitless cash, which is also transnational. They have their connections in Europe, in the Middle East, in Asia, and elsewhere. They pour this money in, and they effectively tell the people in Kentucky, we don't like your guy. We want a more compliant guy. You know, he can vote on your stuff. We don't really care about your stuff, but he's going to submit to our interests. And what this tells us is that Israel effectively has hegemony. We do not have sovereignty. Sovereignty is the ability to determine what happens inside your borders. Whatever your system of government is, whether it's a monarchy, a democracy, it's that either the king, your king, or the people, your citizenry, your voters, they get to determine what happens inside your borders and how the taxes are collected and what they're spent on and when we go and kill and die in a conflict. If Israel has that much influence over the legislative process, which is to say the picking and choosing of the elected representatives, then do they not control our country? Do they not have a sphere of influence in America? Does it not suggest that whether it's Randy Fine in Florida or Ed Gallrein in Kentucky or Chuck Schumer in New York, that these United States are a part of their sphere of influence, that their money and their media power and their oligarchical pull and influence actually exerts gravity on rural Kentucky? Obviously, that is the conclusion. And so it means that the whole system is a farce. If at the end of the day, a congressman cannot say no to Israel, then that means the buck stops with Israel, and in particular, Jewish billionaires. If a representative, hi, I'm a representative, I'm the spokesperson of the sovereign citizens of the Republic of the United States of America, but I cannot tell my Jewish backers no. If I vote a certain way, a Jewish billionaire is going to inject $50 million into my race and I lose my seat and I have problems with my family, then they control the whole system. They control the whole process. They control the appropriations. They control the nominations, the executive branch. They control the whole thing. We're not a free country. We're not an independent, free, strong nation. That makes us a vassal of Israel. That makes us a puppet regime of Israel. How is that any different than in some backwater South American or African country or some kind of Pacific, Oceanic microstate? If the CIA doesn't like your leader, if the CIA doesn't like the alignment of your latest regime, let's say you do too much business with China, you buy too many weapons from Russia, so the CIA comes in and installs some new leader, who's really in control of your country? You're a puppet of the United States. How is that any different than if Israel doesn't like the American president? Like, let's say, for example, Joe Biden? Then all the Jewish billionaires like Miriam Adelson and Bill Ackman and the rest of them are going to pour millions of dollars in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars. And they're going to bring in the full weight of the Jewish media. And you're going to have guys like Larry Ellison involved. And Zuckerberg is not going to support Biden this time around. And they're going to install a more compliant president like Trump, who's going to give him TikTok, who's going to give him Harvard, who's going to give him a war in Iran, who's going to give him the 2,000-pound bombs, who's going to ban the anti-Semites from getting a visa or going to the World Cup. And in the end, something like today, if a single solitary congressman doesn't want to vote for that kind of stuff, they're going to overthrow him too. How is that any different? That makes us, as clear as it can possibly be, a puppet regime of Israel. And how is it maintained? It's maintained through our Jewish oligarchy.
I disavow it outright. We would never suggest landing a full force open hand slap across the face of any of those gentlemen, ladies. We would never in a million years dream of gently taking off Bill Gates's glasses and then smacking him in the face right in the nose like he deserves it. Never. Us? No, we would never. It's a great video, though. That was a very funny video. Very funny AI video. That's how AI should be used, I think, personally. I think that's a great way to use it. So, let's talk about anti-Semitism. Hell, let's talk about anti-Semitism forever, every day. Let's talk about nothing else. Because our government seems obsessed with this concept, and I don't know if the Thomas Massie election was some sort of starting gun or something, but yesterday was the day. And there's so much of this, I can't even keep track of it. I keep thinking I see the same story posted over and over, and I'm like, oh no, wait, that's a whole different Jewish security bill being put forward. So yesterday, all yesterday, Federal Task Force to Combat Anti-Semitism announces 15-city National Awareness and Action Tour. From the Justice Department, May 19th, the Department of Justice Task Force to Combat Anti-Semitism today announced the launch of a 15-day National Awareness and Action Tour to combat anti-Semitism, which is interesting. I guess that would be kind of like a state religion. It's kind of like we have a state religion, it's kind of like we live in like a Jewish theocracy almost. I guess when the federal government is sending out contingents, diplomats, to go, you know, support a single religion over all the others to compel Americans to be subservient and, you know, comply with the dictates of this one religion, I guess we sort of have a state religion now. That's how that works. That was just one thing. Meanwhile, sweeping new IHRA anti-Semitism bill put forward. Bipartisan U.S. senators unveil sweeping anti-Semitism security bill. This allocates $1 billion to Jewish communities, censor speech critical of Israel slash Zog, censor students critical of Israel slash Zog, censor online speech critical of Israel slash Zog. The bill is introduced by two Israel-funded Zog agents, Zog, of course, being Zionist-occupied government. The measure will require the Department of Education to designate an anti-Semitism coordinator and lay out new regulations to combat anti-Semitism at colleges that receive DOE funding, including requiring those colleges to establish non-discrimination policies and grievance processes. It would also boost nonprofit security grant funding to $1 billion that can be used by Jewish communities, as well as create a new grant that can be used for places of worship. The bill would, in addition, require new disclosures about how online platforms moderate and respond to anti-Semitic content. So again, I can go through and sort of, you know, compare and contrast like what the reasons they say this is for and like why they say this is doing this versus like what it's actually doing. But I think it's better to just lay out what they're actually doing, right? They're going to couch it in language that disguises the real purpose of this, but it shouldn't be all that confusing. They're trying to make criticism of Jewish people illegal in this country, and they're making big strides in doing this. They're trying to destroy the First Amendment in all of its component parts, right? The First Amendment isn't just freedom of speech. It's freedom of the press. It's freedom of religion. It's freedom of, you know, to petition the government for redress of grievances. It's all of these things. So they're destroying the First Amendment. They're installing Judaism as the state religion. They're taking for themselves privileges that are not afforded people who aren't in their group. And they're paying for a private security force that will protect them and them alone, but they're doing it with government money, taxpayer money. And they're doing this all over the world. And in places like England and Australia, it's even more egregious and more insane. You know, like UK is maybe the best example, where you've got time after time after time after time, white people being targeted by Muslims, being viciously attacked, the grooming gangs, the stabbings, it goes on and on. And the only response from the UK government is to call the people who are mad about that far-right extremists and literally throw them in jail. Meanwhile, two Jewish guys and a Muslim guy get stabbed by an insane Muslim dude. They don't even die. Like, they, you know, they're not even murdered, but they do get stabbed. And it wasn't targeting Jews. It was targeting random people. Two of them happened to be Jews, but others weren't. But it doesn't matter. None of that matters, because in response to that, they had like multiple memorial services. Keir Starmer, who of course came out and called everybody who was mad about, you know, the Southport stabbings, far-right racist, and threw them in jail for being outraged that their children were murdered, goes and gives like tearful speeches where he talks about the utmost importance of protecting the Jewish population in the UK and how it basically, you know, defines who they are, and they'll, you know, go above and beyond. They'll do whatever it takes to protect, you know, the poor innocent Jews. And they do. I mean, it's not just words. They actually give them, like they do here in America, tens of millions of pounds to provide for their own private security forces who are armed, right? So in Australia and the UK, each time there's an incident like the shooting at Bondi Beach, more gun control legislation goes forward. They take the arms from everybody in Australia except the Jewish people, who are actually given carve-outs and allowed to carry guns and allowed to employ armed guards whenever they want for whatever they want. In the UK, they do this. They have like a special name for the, you know, Jewish police. And it's funny because there will be instances where the Jewish police will be abusing somebody they're arresting, like kick them in the head. And then it gets reported on as if it's the UK police, but it's not. It's a private security group that is there only and solely to protect the Jews. They just don't get the same training that normal police do, so they're more violent. Maybe that's on purpose. I don't know. So that's happening here in America now, too. Already, Jewish groups get something like 94%. Of all Homeland Security grants. So, you know, if you know any Jewish people, like, their preschools are almost like prisons. Again, I don't think it's a healthy way to live exactly, but it probably feels pretty safe that basically every Jewish school, every synagogue is provided with like over the top extreme security, courtesy of the taxpayer around them. So like, I don't necessarily begrudge them having security. I think they should pay for it themselves. And I think that if you're going to be giving out grants to religious groups on the basis of them being attacked, churches are attacked at a significantly higher rate than Jewish places are attacked. And the majority of attacks against Jewish places are false flags by Jewish people or by black people. And it's like every week there's a new example. Earlier this week, there's a video of a guy going around spraying swastikas. He's a progressive black dude. So they take these like nonviolent, but like, you know, graffiti on the side of a synagogue. They count that as an anti-Semitic attack. And then they take taxpayer dollar on the basis of this. So already, like I said, they get 94% or so of Homeland Security grants that are just meant for places of worship. They all just go to the Jewish groups. And, you know, probably some of that money just gets turned back around into AIPAC or whatever else. It's sort of a self-fulfilling, you know, cycle they have in operation. But they're getting, you know, like another $1 billion injected specifically into them. Now, this story is from last year, I believe, but it just shows that, like, they've been trying to do this for about 3 years now. Like, 2024, they really started putting forward the IHRA definition. They already have. I mean, it's already established that there is an Office of Anti-Semitism in every single federal office. So every federal office has an oversight, you know, Jewish committee, basically. Like, they're there to make sure that everything in that federal office complies with the demands of the Jewish lobby and the, you know, Israeli oligarchy. So that means that, like, if you're in education, everything has to be in line with the education that they want to teach you. If you're in whatever else, it's like everything has to be aligned with what these people want. So that is a theocracy. That's a takeover of our federal government by a religious group. And it's obviously contrary to the First Amendment. So how are they able to do this? How are they able to achieve this? Why is Trump going along with this? I think I have an answer to that question. I think we've seen a couple answers to that question recently, and I'll get to that in just a little bit. But this is from, I think, November 2024, actually. Pro-Israel censors America under the guise of anti-Semitism while America is getting ready for Thanksgiving. The Israel Network is busy meeting with congressional lawmakers to pass IHRA anti-Semitism bills that will criminalize criticism of Israel to include terrorism, just like the UK. So again, they put this forward. They you know, try to get this done. It was people like Matt Gaetz who stood up and said, hey, the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism basically says that we can't read portions of the New Testament without violating it. And so it became a bit of a sticking point. So the way they're dealing with that now is they're going to have a separate bill that's just about the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which is key to their whole thing. And it's the thing that lays out that Zionism is anti-Semitism and that, you know, it basically says any crimes committed by Jews, real or imaginary, like you just can't talk about it. Anything that like we've always said with hate speech, and this is the case with all hate speech, it's only invoked when reality matches the stereotype. Right. So if you talk about Jews using their money to influence, you know, American politics because they're actually loyal to Israel, you know, like that'll trip the wire. Even if you're repeating what they say under the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, that's included. It literally just does not allow you to talk badly about Jews. And it says you're not allowed to say things like, you know, the Jews killed Jesus. It's like, all right, well, the Bible says that. So we're not allowed to read the Bible now. And this became a bit of a sticking point. And so they're basically rewriting it, you know, patching up some of the things people were complaining about and are putting it forward again. And they're going to do this over and over and over and over. And every time, incrementally, we'll lose a little bit more of our freedom of speech. We'll normalize that much more the idea that speech or ideas are somehow violent and the Jews have a right to dictate to us what we're allowed to believe. So I'm against that personally. And I'm not sure why everybody isn't seeing this for what it is. Pro-Israel censorship under guise of anti-Semitism. And it just goes through all the various ways that every single aspect of our federal government is being weaponized by the Jewish diaspora against their enemies. DOJ announces a 15-citywide nationwide anti-Semitism awareness and action tour to increase reporting of anti-Semitism, strengthen collaboration between local, federal law enforcement and Jewish communities, and foster broad interfaith opposition to anti-Semitism amongst Jews, Baptist Christians, Catholics, and Muslims. So the goals of the tour include increasing reporting of anti-Semitic incidents by local officials, strengthening collaboration between local law enforcement, federal agencies, and Jewish communities. That's what we need. That's absolutely what we need more of. So again, okay, are we going to have a tour of anti-whiteness awareness action tour? Are we going to see an anti-Christian tour happen? Not anytime soon, because we're a theocracy. We're a Jewish theocracy. Bipartisan U.S. senators unveil sweeping anti-Semitism security bill. From social media to college campuses, we've seen how bigotry manifests into real-world violence against Jews, Rosen said. Rosen, one of the guys who's put this forward. That's why we must take concrete steps to understand the extent of anti-Semitism, both online and offline, and ensure that Jewish communities have access to robust security resources and government protection. See, one of the little sleight-of-hand tricks that these people will play is they'll say, no, we're talking about anti-Semitic crimes. We're talking about violence. You can think whatever you want. We would never try to impose our beliefs on you. Who, us? The righteous Jews? So they'll say, no, this is about violence. This is about the attacks that are happening, which if that's the case, then why do you need the laws? It's already illegal to physically assault somebody. What are you talking about? Right? We played the video. I mean, it's in the Eighth Front War, Shabbos, Kestenbaum. Send them to jail. I'll tell you what we do to anti-Semites. Send them to jail. When people question him on that, he said, oh, I said anti-Semitic crimes. I said if they commit crimes. Oh, you said if they commit crimes, send them to jail. You thought that necessary to say? No, we understand. When you say anti-Semitism, what you mean is the ideas, the words, the books, the movies, you don't have to do any actions. You know how I know? Because you say that the, you know, main focus of this bill is to stop anti-Semitism online. Well, you can't really commit violence online. You can say things online. You can express things online. They're not worried about crimes. They're not worried about violence. They're worried about your thoughts. They're worried about your words. They're worried about your resistance to their program. They're worried about the awareness levels rising, even though they're the ones doing it themselves. So just understand, this has nothing to do with anti-Semitic crimes. Those are already illegal. They're crimes, obviously. We already have hate speech. I don't think we should have hate crime anything. What they're saying is we need to police anti-Semitism online to protect Jewish people. The only thing that happens online is sharing ideas. So I don't think it's that hard to read through the lies and go, okay, you're trying to destroy the First Amendment. It's pretty simple, actually. Our nation is facing an epidemic of anti-Semitism. Year after year, we're seeing unprecedented levels of anti-Semitic violence and harassment. Jewish Americans are being targeted, attacked, and killed simply because of who they are. Not really. I mean, white people are. White people are murdered at like a shocking rate. We never get this level of interest from the federal government. They would never, ever, ever suggest that white people deserve protection, which again is interesting, and we'll go through some of the numbers here. The legislation now proposed includes $1 billion in security funding for houses of worship and other at-risk nonprofits, a key demand in the six-point security proposal that Jewish Federations of North America have been promoting on Capitol Hill. At-risk nonprofits. You know, it's like going back to the John Podoretz clip that we showed earlier, where he's like, yeah, Jews, you know, are massively overrepresented in political giving, but also charitable giving. And it's like, yeah, charities like the ADL, charities like the SPLC, who then get on camera and go, we're not looking out for some universal moral. We're looking out for the Jews and we protect the Jews, which is one of these things where it's like, yeah, I give to charity. And you're just like giving it to a security guard to patrol your house. Yeah, I charitably donate to myself and my community. Great. So $1 billion towards Jewish groups who already get 94% of Homeland Security grants. DHS awards $94 million in grants to help 512 Jewish faith-based organizations from targeted violence and terrorism. This was from June of last year. So just remember, like every couple of months, there's some new bill to provide tens of millions, if not $1 billion, specifically to the Jewish community so they can better protect themselves from the thoughts. They can better guard against people disliking them or thinking that, I don't know, the American government upholds them over and above regular citizens in a way that is inconsistent with our moral values. The DHS is working to stop the deeply disturbing rise in anti-Semitic attacks across the United States. Okay. U.S. to spend $454 million securing religious institutions as anti-Semitism spikes. This was August 2024, right? So just like every 6 months or so, another $500 million directly to Jewish groups and communities so they can continue to protect themselves. So, do you know how much money, do you have any idea how much money this is? Literally billions and billions and billions of dollars. What could you set up with billions and billions and billions of dollars? You could set up like a state of your own. You could have practically a state within a state. You could have security that amounted to a police force. You can have, you know, everything that you need for a state, but you can have it within a state and paid for by the taxpayers of that state who don't actually benefit from the security that you provide yourself with the money from the state. It's pretty interesting. Justice Department announces formation of advisory committee on anti-Semitism. President Trump has made combating anti-Semitism a top priority of the administration, and we thank Leo Terrell for his leadership at the Department of Justice. So this was May 19th. So again, are these the same? These are all different, right? So you've got the Federal Task Force to Combat Anti-Semitism doing a 15-city nationwide awareness tour. You've got the Justice Department announcing the formation of an advisory committee on anti-Semitism, and you have the anti-Semitism bill put forward by Congressman Jackie Rosen and James Lankford, all on the same day. All of these different things, all at once, all on the same day. It's pretty interesting, I think. It's worth commenting on. And again, if this goes the way that Australia and England have gone, then I'm sure they'll use anti-Semitism as an excuse to take our guns and give guns only to Jewish groups. And won't that be nice for them? Now, here's where everything I'm saying will make a hell of a lot more sense. Jewish groups are far and away the safest demographic in the entire country, yet the only one our government cares about. So U.S. homicide rates by group per million. Black Americans experience homicide at 200 to 250 per million. Hispanic Americans experience homicide at 60 to 90 per million. For whites, it's 25 to 35 per million. For Asian Americans, it's 15 to 25 per million. For Jewish Americans, it's 3 to 4 per million. So white people are around 10 times more likely to be murdered than Jews in America. But we have three independent actions by the federal government to defend Jewish Americans over and above and exclusively despite this. Jews are killed at the lowest per capita rate of any large identifiable U.S. group. And yeah, what would that be? 50 times as much as black Americans? But yeah, 10 times. White Americans are 10 times as likely as Jews to be murdered, but maybe that's because they get a couple $1 billion a year. 66.6 times. Okay, so you're 66 times more likely to be killed as a black person in America than a Jewish person in America. Maybe that's because of all the $1 billion that they get. I don't know if they need, I don't want any more Jews to be killed, but I don't think we have our priorities straight. I think there's a lot of other populations in this country that are targeted because of their identity, because they're white, because they're Christian. How many transgender shooters have we seen go into churches, kill children? Never seen anything like it in the Jewish community, but the Jewish community routinely receives gigantic cash injections of billions of dollars to set up their state within a state so that they can control what goes into your education, what's in your kids' textbooks. Obviously, they have people in social media to defend. So what's being set up, and again, America is actually happening at a slower pace than everywhere else because we have the First Amendment, and they have to figure out ways to, hollow that out and destroy that sort of incrementally. In other places like Australia and England, it's just straight up. They're just like, Jews get to have guns, but nobody else does. Jews get money to defend themselves. Nobody else does. If a white guy gets murdered, you're a racist, far-right terrorist for defending it. But if a Jewish person gets murdered, the whole government has to shut down and reorganize to to make sure it never happens again. This is beyond just like unfair or like inconsistent. It's part of a plot that's moving forward. These are the pieces of the machine going into place, and soon the machine will be activated. I think we have 2 years. But they have about 2 years to get anti-Semitism bills passed, get all of those holding, you know, FEMA camps built. And then once everything's in place, it'll be like dominoes falling, and we'll have to take lessons from the communist revolutions of old. Look, God promised them Kentucky 2,000 years ago, okay? Kentucky is the promised land. It is the holy land. It's the land of milk and honey. And it was promised to the Jews. Sorry. Sorry. Now you have to die. Now everyone in Kentucky has to submit or die. It's what God wants. I'm pretty sure. So there have been a bunch of, maybe it's coincidence. Maybe it's all a big coincidence that all of these things happen to be occurring at exactly the same time. But I don't think it is. I don't think it is a coincidence. I think all of these things are intimately involved with each other. And you tell me if I'm the crazy one here. You know, obviously, you talk about the biggest scandals, the biggest things dividing the Republican Party or Americans at this moment, and it is Jeffrey Epstein, Mossad agent running Jewish honeypot operation to blackmail and control American politicians as well as tech, whatever, all these people. And the Iran war, which obviously is on behalf of Israel, service of their greater Israel goal, and they intend to use the Iran war in a couple of different ways, obviously to get rid of their last remaining major rival in the Middle East. So they can act with impunity and have total freedom of action. They want to turn Iran into another Syria where American or Israeli forces can bomb them at will whenever they want, and that Iran will have no ability to respond in kind. But in addition to that, if they can have a Pyrrhic victory where America is severely damaged in the process, all the better, since by the time Iran is taken out, Israel will assume its role as, you know, hegemony in the Middle East, if not the world, and they don't want to be competing with America once that happens. And again, you just have to look at these statements of people like major investors here in America describing how they're withdrawing all of their investments from America to Israel, calling America the falling, dying empire and Israel the rising empire. So at the same time as that, you've got this frantic and hectic and inexplicable drive to build data centers everywhere. You've got the data centers, you've got digital ID coming up, you've got all these anti-Semitism bills being passed, you've got Europe doing things like writing laws to bring back the draft. Obviously, Ed Gowron is in favor of the draft. People from Palantir talking about reinstating the draft. On top of that, you've got Palantir integrating themselves into basically every system of American society, from healthcare to like driver's licenses, just absolutely everything. That'll be the operating system of the New World Order that's being put in place right now. At the same time as that, you've got things like the Board of Peace being established, and the people who established it talk about it being a rival or a replacement for the UN. Only on the Board of Peace, you're not going to have representatives of nations. You're going to have representatives or CEOs of corporations. This at the same time that Larry Fink, head of BlackRock, who brought us ESG, who was the engine behind the censorship against InfoWars and Alex Jones and all of us for years on end, who, of course, helped to manufacture and then helped to disperse the funds to fix the 2008 crash that, of course, following that crash, we saw the crash of fertility in America to levels that are unsustainable and we've never gotten back up. At the same time, you've got, you know, the precedent being set with things like the bombing of the Venezuelan boats, saying, yeah, look, the American president has the right to kill whoever he wants, whenever he wants, with no oversight, no ability to, you know, fight back or argue your innocence. You're an enemy combatant. And they're stretching that definition as long as humanly possible. They're building gigantic, you know, internment camps for immigrants, but no immigrants are being sent to them. I wonder who that's being built for. They're establishing ICE as this, you know, and of course, we want mass deportation, so we're going to support ICE. We're going to be in favor of ICE, and we're going to roll our eyes when the left is talking about the dangerous precedent being set with ICE being this unaccountable federal, you know, police force wearing masks and, you know, violating rights. Obviously, when they're talking about illegal immigrants, we're going to scoff at that and laugh at that and say you're stupid. At the same time, what is the mechanism preventing that same type of force being used against American citizens, especially when they're already setting the precedent recently with denaturalizing American citizens on the basis of terrorism, which they define as opposition to Israel? So all of these things happening at once, I can't help but see the continuity between them, see the way that they're serving each other, that the shutdown of the Strait of Hormuz will lead to the, you know, crashing of food supplies, which will lead to rationing, which will demand a digital ID to manage all of it. And all of that requires massive processing power that they are building the data centers to get. At the same time, the data centers are destroying the water supplies and the ticks are destroying the wild animals, which I think is actually the purpose of the ticks. Yes, it gives you alpha-gal syndrome and will make you allergic to meat. But how many videos have you seen? I've seen a lot of deer and moose and whatever else literally killed and their bodies covered in these bioengineered ticks. Again, maybe it's all a big coincidence. At the same time, we've got supposedly El Nino coming in, which in normal years leads to massive drought. It's going to affect places that are already in incredible drought, that are building data centers, that are sucking up tens of thousands of gallons, sometimes without even the knowledge of the city, like what took place in Georgia. Okay, I'm just sort of going off the cuff here, but they're making the quick reaction forces for ICE where to deal with, you know, whatever they call it, political unrest, domestic unrest. I think all of these things are being established ahead of basically a giant overthrow of our country on May 1st, 2028, which we should all be absolutely prepared for. And all they really need at this point, like once all these things get into place, all they need is a inflection point. All they need is a terror attack, a false flag, a nuke going off in an American city. And as I've been explaining for years, the next big terror attack, like the next big false flag attack, like 9/11, will make 9/11 look like a puppet show, right? It's because that's the only thing that will work. The only thing that will work, because everybody knows now who carries off these attacks. Everybody knows, you know, the way that you move populations is by putting them into a state of terror. But knowing that doesn't really matter when the attack is real, right? So, you know, sort of what we're having to deal with. And it's really the benefit of being a, you know, secretive, highly coordinated secret society, essentially, is you impose your will on other people and they're always having to respond to you. They have the initiative because they're always the one instigating whatever the problem is. So this is the beauty of false flag. This is why they're used so often. It's like we can recognize that COVID came from a lab. We can recognize that it was probably released on purpose and that it's being used to achieve goals that our enemies have designed. At the same time, it's a virus and you got to protect yourself from it, right? A false flag, the only thing false about it is the flag. So if they're going to try to pull off a false flag to sort of be the impetus and the ignition of the prison, you know, digital prison planet they're very rapidly building all around us, it's going to have to be something so big and so overwhelming and so traumatizing that, like, even if you know it's fake, you're going to have to go along with whatever they say, right? And look, have you seen Gaza? Have you seen what these people are capable of? Have you seen what they're willing to do if they think they can succeed? What do you think the reaction to even the most hardened conspiracy theorist would be if in a single day in April of 2028, suitcase nuclear devices explode in New York City and LA and Dallas and Omaha, Nebraska, like where else, you know, five or six, like how many do you think they could set off in a single day? How much do you think would be needed to set off in a single day for people to say, holy crap, whatever you have to do to fix this problem, do it. If there are suitcase nukes going off, and they might do it like staggered, maybe like one day it's New York and as we're reeling from that, one goes off in LA and people go, holy crap, I don't want to die in a flash of light. Do what you have to, government. right? And that's got to be the response. It's got to be that overwhelming. It's got to be that big. They may not need to even do that, though. The way things are going now, we're being strangled. We're slowly having the life squeezed out of us. Maybe a big major terror attack at this point would only, you know, reverse the trajectory. The trajectory we're on now is towards total enslavement. And we're sitting here watching the prison walls be built. We're not really doing much to stop it. So, you know, they may not need to do a false flag, but if they did, it would be one so overwhelming that even people who knew it was fake would have to submit to government control out of fear, and that fear has to be real. So again, I just see all these things being put into place, and like, it's hard to keep track of all of it, and it's hard to like keep your finger on the pulse of all of these as I see, like, okay, they're putting forward an anti-Semitism bill, but it gets knocked down. But now they're putting a new one that's a little bit changed. Now there's two anti-Semitism bills, one about the IHRA definition, but the other one doesn't have that definition because they want to get it through without that definition causing problems. Is it the same bill as last time? Is this a new bill? You know, it's hard to keep track. It's hard to, because it's so relentless and it's from so many fronts. And they just do it until they get what they want. So even if you defeat the bill, another bill's coming next year, and another bill's coming next year, and another until you pass it. They're going to keep altering it slightly, you know, mount a campaign against Thomas Massie, get him out of the way. Now you're one vote closer to getting that bill passed. They will move heaven and earth to achieve these goals because they genuinely, some of them genuinely, some of them artificially, believe this is an existential crisis for the Jewish people worldwide, but in particular, the state of Israel. So why is Trump going along with it? So the question is, why has Trump changed 180 degrees even to what he was just before being inaugurated in January? And that's another thing, is that you see the way, like, look at the stuff that they did right as Trump got elected. One of the first things they did, the third day in office, he launched the Stargate project with Sam Altman and Larry Ellison, and all of the big tech scumbag Zionist oligarchs were there in his office announcing this massive drive to build data centers and to lead on AI. And it's like, why were they so insistent on doing that right away? That couldn't have waited a month or two. Is China going to outdo us? Is it that urgent? Or is it because they need to get this done as quickly as possible, so they really can't wait because they're going to need, you know, they only have a couple years before the big, you know, communist revolution. So got to get these things in place. And also, if you announce it 3 days in, there's a lot of other stuff going on. Maybe it gets lost in the mix. And maybe by the time people start realizing what's going on, that memory of that's kind of faded. They didn't want, you know, this to be something that a bunch of people had eyes on. They wanted to announce it, let everybody sort of in their class know, hey, here's what we're doing. But they didn't want, yeah, and it's to cure your cancer, I'm sure. They didn't want to have the people, you know, asking questions about it. So it went kind of quietly. So I think one of the reasons they did a lot of this stuff early in Trump's second administration was so it could just be quietly happening in the background and not getting a lot of attention until the parts are put into place for their activation. And so then we have what happened yesterday. A couple things happened yesterday, which again, maybe it's coincidence, but I really have trouble divorcing the idea of Thomas Massie being ousted by Israel on exactly the same day that three different federal initiatives are launched. The anti-Semitism working group, the anti-Semitism speaking tour in 15 cities, and the anti-Semitism bills being put forward by Lankford and Rosen. On that same day, it's announced that Donald Trump will be immune from investigation by the IRS forever. And his whole family has somehow gotten the IRS to promise to never audit them for the rest of their lives. I think we figured out why he made the deal. I think we figured out what was the deal that Trump made. On the same day, or the day before, practically, Donald Trump is being given a $1.7 billion slush fund by the United States government, ostensibly as payback for weaponization of the government, But in reality, it's literally just a $1.7 billion slush fund for Trump to use as he sees fit. At the same time, Donald Trump Jr. and all of, you know, Trump's family members are seeing their net worth rise by billions because of the insider trading and the government contracts that they're getting in sort of the most pure examples of corruption we've seen since, like, Hunter Biden, pretty much. So again, Trump has, and this is, it's not even a question, which is why it's so confusing that, like, most people can't see this. It's crazy. The boomers out there, the hell is wrong with y'all? Everything Trump ran on, he is reversing. Everything. Everything, everything, everything. Trump's H-1B approval rate for his second term is higher than his first term and higher than Obama's term, tying Biden during his first year. The current rate of approvals and pace of applications, Trump could end up approving more H-1B visa applications in his first term and maybe more than Biden. Trump's restrictions on H-1B visas, notably the 100,000 new application fee, only went into effect late September 2025. The fee does not apply to any visa holder already in the U.S., and the visa still allows for dependents to be sponsored and to migrate with them. A student visa holder can hypothetically transition to H-1B status without the fee and then sponsor main dependents. As a note, Trump has already reduced the number of approved student visas and other visas broadly with reviews of visa applications, notably visas from the 39 banned countries that are subject to extra scrutiny. But they've allowed something like 6 million H-1B approvals over the years, 3 million of those being from Trump. Okay, so he's in favor of replacing American workers with Indians. Great. You also have this. Trump backs down from requiring banks to collect citizenship information. This is another case where Trump doing this was actually genius and simple. It's just saying, hey, look, you're not allowed to open banking accounts for illegal immigrants, so you have to do the due diligence and research whether your customer is a citizen or not. But they're dropping that. Why would you drop that? There's only one reason. There's only one reason you would ever drop this, and it's because you're in favor of legal immigrants opening bank accounts here in America. Duh. Trump executive order to stop short of requiring banks to collect citizenship information. President Donald Trump will sign a pair of executive orders Tuesday aimed at insulating the U.S. financial system from undocumented immigrants and expand fintech firms' access to the Federal Reserve payment rails, a White House official told Semaphore. The first executive order is a step back from initial proposals, which were expected as recently as Tuesday to direct financial institutions to collect proof of citizenship from their customers. That drew widespread ire from the banking industry, which warned of implementation cost and potential liability. Oh, well, better back down then. Well, you better back down immediately. Now, obviously, if banks were, you know, doing something against Jews, there would be no concern about the cost or the expense or the inconvenience. They would just do it because that's how this works. When white people complain that universities are literally teaching classes hating white people and how white people are evil, we're told, sorry, First Amendment, be too expensive, be too complicated. How would we even do it? It's impossible to even say how we do it. Meanwhile, just take a look at the anti-Semitism bills. Yeah, we're going to have an officer who's going to, you know, be in charge of your school, who's going to be there to make sure that everything you do and say and all the policies you have comport themselves to, you know, the Jewish view of the world. That's how you do it. They can do it. They do it for Jews. They do it for Jews all the time. They forced the resignation of the Harvard president because she wasn't sufficiently pro-Israel. And to even say that, it's not even right. She just didn't go out of her way to break her own college's rules to shut down legal protests by the students. So again, the submission required is not just allowing things to happen. You have to proactively engage in the repression of freedom of speech, or else you're the bad guy and you'll have your life destroyed. And then they'll have conservatives taking credit for it as if this was some movement against DEI, when in reality, the person that replaced the Harvard president was just as in favor of DEI, but was also an Israeli Jew. So there's that. Okay, so Trump has completely flipped on absolutely everything that he originally ran on and even ran on in 2024. And I think it's a perfectly valid speculation that, yeah, he's probably being blackmailed. His friends are probably being blackmailed. He's probably honest about that when he says that, you know, the Epstein files would embarrass some of his friends, including people like Howard Lutnick. But that's not enough. I don't think just, you know, pure blackmail would work if it even exists. You got to have the carrot and the stick. and in this case, the carrot, are all of these things, are this. The United States is hereby forever barred and precluded from prosecuting or pursuing examinations or similar or related reviews against Trump or related or affiliated individuals, including family members or related companies and trust. Have you ever heard of anything like this? Have you ever thought that even such a thing was possible? What does that even mean? They've somehow got the IRS to agree to never look into Trump or anybody associated with Trump. Who could pull off such a thing? What group of people have the level of influence necessary to achieve such a inordinate benefit? Like, what, I mean, that's crazy. I've literally never even imagined such a thing was possible. I wonder if that has anything to do with Trump turning against his original agenda. I wonder if he was told, look, you do what we say, you're immune for life, you can make billions of dollars, we'll cover it all up. Don't worry about it, it's fine. I mean, have you noticed the change in tenor, the change in atmosphere around mainstream media? Do you remember what it was like the first time Trump was president? Do you remember the relentless attacks, the constant fabrication of scandal? I mean, it's actually kind of fun to do. Go to like the Wayback Machine. Go to Google News and start searching by, you know, time period. And just look up like what CNN was talking about on literally any random weekday, any week in the first 4 years that Trump was president, 2016 through 2020. Every single day was a new ridiculous scandal. Every single week was a new, like, you know, breaking news, drop everything headline about something that like you don't even remember. Go back and look. You'll be like, oh, right. There was this big scandal over like some ridiculous thing that turned out to be totally fake. I mean, we remember the big ones. We remember the, you know, E. Jean Carroll and this sort of stuff. But there, it was every day. It sort of changed, hasn't it? He's sort of gotten a free pass this go around, hasn't he? I mean, obviously, they're in favor of the Iran war. But I don't think that, you know, sufficiently explains, like, they still, you know, they're like, oh, what's up with this ballroom? We don't know about this. But you'll notice, I mean, you look around, look at how the mainstream media is covering things. It is so wildly different from how it was before. I think Trump made the deal. I think he made the deal to not be investigated, to not be audited by the IRS, to not be hounded continuously by the mainstream media. And in exchange, he gave them the war with Iran. He covered up the Epstein files. He's building the data centers. He's handing over the keys of the kingdom to Palantir. And he's doing it all so that he can skate off and live as a billionaire in Israel, I guess, since he wants to be president there. I think he sold us out for this. Trump signed a directive to accelerate 6G deployment to operate implantable technologies. Nokia's CEO said that by 2030, smartphones will be implanted directly in our bodies as 6G becomes fully operational. This will likely involve a newly developed AI brain implant known as the Biological Interface System to Cortex, BICS, developed by teams at Columbia University. And of course, Trump is helping to push this forward, and he's very excited about the promise of AI and transhumanism, right? Biological Interface System to Cortex. That way, you know, they'll be able to monitor anti-Semitism while it still is an electrical charge in your neurons. Won't that be convenient? Donald Trump's junior's VC firm flaunts political edge and investment push. Donald Trump's venture capital firm is building an investment empire around quote-unquote patriotic capitalism. 1789 Capital, which counts Trump Jr. as a partner, told the FT that their assets under management have jumped from $200 million to $3.5 billion over the past year, after going on a deal-making spree with many of the leading privately held AI companies. So again, this is straight up, you know, insider trading, and it's Hunter Biden-style selling of access to the president. And we'll get back into this on the other side, because I have a video of J.D. Vance explaining that, yes, the Trump administration is insider trading, but it's not Trump doing it himself. He has to have somebody do it for him, so it's fine. So why are they getting away with this? Why isn't the media hounding them about this? Why is the IRS promising to never investigate him ever? I think it's because he sold us out. Welcome back, folks. yeah, I think if you're wondering, you know, what was the deal Trump made to sell out America to Israel, I think we have a couple answers here. Trump sued his own IRS for $10 billion over leaked tax returns. He then settled with his own DOJ, and the settlement created a $1.776 billion taxpayer-funded fund to compensate his political allies. It's almost like they're rubbing it in our face because 1.776, like that's obviously not an amount, you know, established by any, you know, sense of logic or fairness or no, it's like symbolic, right? So yeah, we'll just choose a sort of arbitrary number put forward just because, you know, I guess that's how much they agreed to. Trump filed the lawsuit. The president's DOJ settled it. The president's allies collect the money and you're paying for it. The fund covers January 6 defendants, Mar-a-Lago raid claims, the Russia investigation. Anyone who says they were a victim of lawfare can file a claim and get a check. Oh, can we? Because that could just about cover the lawfare against us. Now, the lawfare against us being carried out by, you know, certain law groups in Washington, D.C., who already settled with Trump, the way they settled with him was they promised to provide $40 million worth of pro bono work. What was that pro bono work? Suing us, okay, suing Alex Jones and InfoWars, as well as writing the text for, guess what, the anti-Semitism bills that we've been talking about this whole time. So Donald Trump was targeted by these law firms, got them to agree to a settlement. In that settlement, he said, in exchange for abusing me and the American people, you have to write a law to make anti-Semitism illegal and destroy Alex Jones. So that's what they're doing. So we're not getting any of this. Oh, and by the way, neither are the January 6 prisoners. Johnson won't say whether January 6 rioters will be eligible for a new lawfare fund. I'm not going to comment on that until it comes up. Speaker Mike Johnson refused to rule out whether individuals convicted as part of the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol would be eligible to receive money from the Trump administration's new anti-weaponization fund, or say whether he would oppose a scenario where they would qualify. Yeah, I don't think they're getting any money. I think this is a Donald Trump political slush fund, and it's what they created. Okay, so Donald Trump just got a slush fund. He just got promised by the IRS that he and his entire family and anybody associated with him will no longer be audited by the IRS, which would definitely facilitate insider trading and whatever manipulations they want to pull behind the scenes, like they're doing with Donald Trump Jr.'s VC firm, who's investing in AI, who's then getting government contracts, and he's making literally billions of dollars off of this. Donald Trump Jr.'s VC firm flaunts political edge and investment push. It's like Hunter Biden, just to a much, much greater and more insidious degree. And J.D. Vance commented on this earlier today. Here he is explaining that, yes, the president is an inside trader. Yes, he makes money off of decisions he makes on behalf of the American people, but that it's done through proxy, so actually it's fine. Let's watch.
Okay, number one. The president doesn't sit at the Oval Office on his computer on his like Robinhood account buying and selling stocks. That's absurd. He has independent wealth advisors who manage his money. He is a wealthy person. He has had success in business. He's not making these stock trades himself. And your question imputes that. It doesn't say it exactly, but a reasonable person listening to that question would assume the president is sitting around and doing that. He's not. Second of all, you're right. I am a big fan of banning members of Congress from trading stocks. So is the President of the United States. All of us believe that nobody should be taking proprietary information gained from public service and buying and selling stocks. We want to ban that process. And I think the way to lead by example is banning that process, banning that approach, and making it illegal, which is exactly what the president has proposed doing. Okay. Yes.
See, that's what we call BS. And we've seen the records where it's like right every time, right before Trump's announcement of something with the Iran war, bets are made minutes before he makes the announcement that happened to capitalize on those announcements to the tunes of millions of dollars. And it happens every single time he makes an announcement. Often the announcements mean absolutely nothing and seem to be there solely and completely to change the market in order to benefit. The Palm Beach investment firm owned by Donald Trump Jr. says it aims to reach $10 billion in assets by investing in AI. More on the other. I mean, this makes sense to me, right? Makes sense to everybody else? No IRS bothering him. He can make billions of dollars. He can use insider training. He's you know, investing in AI companies that he's then giving giant contracts for as they sell out the American people to the tech oligarchy. And look, after being harassed for 4 years, I mean, I could just see how it works. It's just, hey, look, Donnie, you know, it's probably Mark Levin putting him in a headlock, something. Look, Donnie, this can go one of two ways. You may be able to fight and struggle for the rest of your life, and maybe by the end of your life, you might remain out of jail, but you will be despised by everybody that we can convince, which is a lot of people, hell of a lot of people. And your whole life will be a continuous misery of lawsuits and attacks and threats of jail and IRS audits. We're going to destroy you, or you can serve us. Simple as that. You serve us, not only will we let you make billions of dollars, we'll let you retire, we'll actually make you a celebrity, we'll chill out on the mainstream media, you know, they'll be in favor of you bit by bit, incrementally. By the time you're out of office, they'll be singing your praises, and you'll be able to retire, maybe in Israel, maybe in Mar-a-Lago, wherever you are. You know, we'll make sure that all of these threats of investigations disappear. And all you have to do is just a couple of simple things. We want the war in Iran. We want you to silence the Epstein outrage. Pretty simple, pretty easy. You can do whatever else you want. All the other stuff that you want, we're all for it. We'll help you get it done. But we need those two things. And if you deliver for us, we'll deliver for you. Now, it seems like he took the deal because it seems like all of these things are being implemented. And it seems like he's just fully on board now. 100%. He is literally worse than the likes of George W. Bush or Barack Obama at this point, I hate to say. But this is the thing. The right wingers were on guard against Barack Obama, very suspicious of everything he was doing. Somehow Trump is doing even more that should outrage or at the very least worry you. And yet we're cheering it on because it's ICE and we're told they're going after illegal immigrants. Then they don't actually arrest the illegal immigrants, but they do have the laws and the precedent in place if they ever wanted to turn on the American people. So I think that's what happened. The stupid thing about this is that Trump has no leverage. What leverage does he have? How are they going to uphold their end of the bargain? I mean, obviously they have a lot of influence, but do they even care about using it for that? I think they're just going to throw Trump to the wolves no matter what. I think they're going to get what they want from him. They're going to destroy the Republican Party in the process. And we're going to, you know, sit there as the Democrats sweep into power and ignore all of the laws and precedents and promises that were made to Donald Trump. Why would they care? They don't give a damn. And hell, even if they're somehow, because of the Jewish influence in America, able to protect Donald Trump from this, we're not being protected. Trump supporters aren't going to be shielded from this. And when the Democrats get back into office, they'll use the IRS to go after every conservative group, every Trump supporter. There's no restrictions to that. Trump made himself a deal. He didn't make a deal for the American people. So, I mean, this is all very troubling, but I think at the end of the day, Trump's going to get screwed. But I can understand the argument. I can understand how they'd go to Trump and say, look, like I said, you can fight the rest of your life. Maybe you can stay out of jail. Maybe your family will not be sent to jail either. You know, we can help with that. But one day you're not going to be here. You know, one day your family's not going to be here. You know who's going to be here? We are. You know who's going to be writing the books? We will. Do you want to go down in history? Do you want your entire legacy to be despised, to be the next Hitler? Because we have the ability to do that. Or do you want to be celebrated? Do you want the books to say that despite, you know, initial reservations, it turned out Donald Trump was a great president and everybody, you know, learned to celebrate his pioneering political style? What do you want your legacy to be? Because it's up to us, because we're going to still be here. 100 years from now, we'll be here. We'll be writing the books. So I think that's the deal he made. And I think he made it with scoundrels that are going to turn on him and stab him in the back, and he'll deserve every second of it. And this time, we'll get to enjoy it. Won't that be fun? Experiencing a Trump impeachment from the other side for once. Because, I mean, in reality, if Trump wanted to protect himself, the thing to do would be to further ingratiate himself with the tens of millions of Americans who believed in him and had his back and sacrificed for him and were willing to go to the mat in defense of him and willing to make it a political issue to fight for. But you've lost all of that. So now, all the people like us who were there making the argument, making the case, you know, arguing against the lies of the Democrats under impeachment, we're going to be sitting here going, no, they're exactly right. No, he did commit these crimes. He is a war criminal. He is insider trading. He is corrupt. He did sell out America for pennies on the dollar. It's just a bad decision overall. It's bad decision after bad decision. He believed him about Iran. Look where that got him. He probably believed him about this too. So, you know, again, it's I would almost understand it if he really, you know, had no other options. You know, when you're left with nothing else, you take any hand that's offered. But, you know, before he went this way, he still had the support of like 100 million Americans, which is kind of a pretty powerful force. And he gave that up. At least gave up half of it to be protected by the Alan Dershowitz of the world. So, you know, maybe they'll go along with it. We don't know. I'm going to move on now. I'm going to move on to a bunch of other stuff that we need to talk about, even though the trend continues to be that white people, white Europeans are endless victims of not just violent assault and harassment and oppression and abuse by their government, but also being blamed on being the problem for all of this. And it's enough already. It's enough already, I think. I don't know how much more needs to happen, but we gotta learn where we are in this world right now. Because while the energy's there, while there are a lot of people all over America, all over the UK, that are patriotic, that are willing to stand up, that are willing to go out of their way to express their support of the classic national character of these countries, they're doing it in a way that is utterly and completely ineffective and serves only to feel like they're doing something. Right now, protesting, I hate to say it, it's about as powerful as recycling is, right? If you think you're doing something to stop recycling or to stop like the world being destroyed because you throw your foam cup in that hole instead of that hole, that's about as effective as like protesting is right now. There's a video, well, there's obviously like a very big march in the UK, and I don't want to criticize the turnout because it was massive, and I do think it's important to, at the very least, you know, let your position be known. But the question is, well, what's the point? What's the point? You've got a million people on the streets of the UK waving the Union Jack, expressing their patriotism, demanding action from the UK government. And what do you get for all of that work and all of that effort and those millions of people in the street? You get ignored. That's what happens. You get completely ignored. Because what are those millions of people going to do? They're going to walk around. They're going to wave signs. They're going to chant. And then they're going to go home. And then the government is going to throw them in jail for disliking the endless violent rapist Muslims that are being planted in their communities. We want our country back. Oh, well, have you tried asking nicely? Did it work? No. What? Did you try waving a flag? And they still sent a rapist to your community? Why? They must be so confused. The people running the UK government, they must be confused about what they're supposed to be doing. Did you wave a flag to let them know? Again, I don't mean to like criticize people out there waving a flag. I love that people are feeling that way. But like, if you have a million people on the street in the UK, I think the thing to do be storm the palace. I would think that, you know, a million, half a million people on the streets of the UK is only powerful if it does something. All that happens when you hold these marches is you feel like you're doing something, but you haven't actually done anything. You haven't actually moved the needle. You haven't actually affected change. But you feel like you've done something. You'll feel good about it, and you'll be satisfied that something, you know, you participated in something. And so even though nothing has happened, you'll, you know, calm down for a little while until you feel the need to march again. And then again, you'll march. And again, the people that know exactly what they're doing and are doing it on purpose will ignore you. So that's what I mean as to, like, where we are. Protests don't matter if the people who run your country don't care. If what they're doing is explicitly designed to destroy you, saying you're being destroyed is not going to be, like, they know. They know. Okay? It's like, I mean, it's like, imagine a bunch of Gazans marching and being like, you're dropping bombs on us. And what do you think Israel's going to be like? Oh my gosh, we are? What? Sorry. Yeah, they're going to do a hunger strike. No, they are doing a hunger strike. That's where Israel makes you hungry and then strikes you. It's the classic Gaza hunger strike. It's where they starve and then blow you up. So like that, like, you know, so like if the people of Gaza were out on a street waving the Gaza flag, what would you say to them? Be like, what are you doing? What are you doing? You think Israel doesn't know it's killing you? You think it doesn't know that you don't like being killed? Like, what are you trying to express here? You're in a war and you're targeted for destruction. The only thing to do now is destroy them first. That's it. That's the only result. It's the only answer. My friend had a funny idea. I don't know if we could do it live here. Might be too much for our current studio setup. But he was like, you should take the Cars for Kids jingle. You all know that famous Cars for Kids jingle? And it was just basically the whole thing was shut down because of false advertising. And it's that same Jewish group that Tyler Oliveira exposed in Northwood, New Jersey, or whatever it's called. Yeah, they run these ads that are like, support kids, donate your car. And they don't tell you that it's literally just an Israeli front, and they just send the money to Jewish groups exclusively. Even though they have people of all races and ethnicities being advertised, it was totally fraudulent. He was like, why don't you play that jingle and just put, you know, a bunch of video of Palestinian kids being blown to pieces. You know, videos of like Palestinian kids bleeding and having their arm cut off and being pulled out of the rubble. Well, you hear the Cars for Kids jingle, because that's actually what it was sponsoring. That's actually what it was supporting, not Cars for Kids. I thought that was a funny idea. Maybe somebody will do that. But yeah, we're gonna move on to some other topics here. I do want to tell you about a new product we have at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm very excited about this. I didn't even know we were doing this until I saw Alex advertise it, and I might. We might be missing one of these by the end of the day. I don't know. Don't tell anybody. But they're new wallets, and I love these. They're, I don't know, I've seen other wallets like this, and they've never really interested me because they just look like, I don't know, credit card or like business card cases. They just are like, you know, kind of like cheap metal. But this one has real leather, and it actually looks cool, and it is obviously very functional. I was just sort of messing around with it during the break, and pulling the cards out is very easy. I have a leather wallet right now, and while I love it, actually my brother-in-law made it for me, and it's got taxation is theft carved across the top, but it's hard to pull the cards out. It really is. And literally just this week, I was like standing in line, and I was trying to pinch my fingers. I just cut my fingernails, and I couldn't get the card out, and it was so frustrating. So this, you don't have to worry about that. These wallets have this convenient pull tab, and so you just pull the card right out, and it can hold more than you expect. I mean, these are very thin wallets, but they can hold something like 25 cards, I think, 25 cards and 20 bills in this wallet, and it folds up nicely, super thin, RFID blocking. The design is amazing. It's got the Betsy Ross stars with 1776 in the middle and a don't tread on me version as well. Very cool wallets. The Tide that you see advertised a lot of places, but these are better. I have to say, I like these more. Again, because they've got that real leather. You can really see the craftsmanship. They're super light and thin. But the other thing is that, you know, I put my wallet in my back pocket, so I don't want to be sitting on hard metal, but this has the leather there to make it a little softer. So if you do put it in your back pocket, it'll be easier. It's the new Freedom Shield RFID wallet. It comes in two powerful patriotic designs, Don't Tread on Me and 1776. It's made with top grain leather and aerospace grade aluminum. The thing is slim, strong, secure, and built for everyday carry. It holds up to 25 cards and 20 bills, has RFID blocking protection, a secure cash strap, and a quick pull tab for access. So you get strength, security, and a premium patriotic design all in one wallet. These things routinely sell for at least $70. That's the regular price for most people. You can get it today for just $49. VIPs get it for $39. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com before these sell out. And I have the feeling, excuse me, I have the feeling these are going to sell out pretty dang quick. And I'm not even joking. I've had my wallet that I have now for probably 10 years. I've never considered getting a new wallet until I saw these. These are actually cool enough. They actually have the leather. I don't know. I've looked at the other ones. There's other brands that a lot of people advertise. And I've thought about it. You know, I could use a new wallet. You go and you look. I'm just like, I just don't like the design, but these are awesome. These are very cool, and they're very small and very thin, and I just love the 1776 on it. I love the Don't Tread on Me as well, but I think I'd go for this one. So I'd get one if I were you. That's all I'm saying. TheAlexJonesStore.com. I'm going to test one out. I think I'll test one out. I think the audience, I think for me to give a real, you know, full endorsement, I think I need to maybe carry it around for a little while. So, you know, it's business. This is for business. I'm going to keep one because I need to advertise it. You know, it's not that I just want it for myself and I'm taking it because I can. Would never do such a thing. But I'm serious. I'm going to start carrying one of these around. It's kind of the same as the knives that we get. I mean, I always take the supplements, but like whenever we get a new product like this, they're always cool. They're always very well designed. And I don't know where we get these things from, but we have the best suppliers in the world. And you can get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com. And I'm going to get mine from right here on the table. All right. I want to play a couple videos here. And we're going to start with clip number two. Because this is propaganda these days. It's not exactly subtle. It's not exactly nuanced. And in my opinion, it's sort of counterproductive. For whatever it intends. And we sort of go back to the classic Stone Toss comic. If you're familiar with that guy, a comic guy draws comics named Stone Toss, and he has a really famous one where it's just a big picture of like two men kissing. It's a person like, are you sure this will help us sell burgers? The other guy's like, burgers? What are you talking about? No, we're going to put a gay couple in our McDonald's ad because we're propagandists, not because we think it'll sell burgers. What are you talking about? That's sort of where we're at here, where it's like, are they trying to actually advertise something? Are they trying to actually promote an idea that they're expressing? Or is there like a fully formed ulterior motive that's actually why this was made? So I guess ostensibly this is L'Oreal Paris TV ad in Germany depicting white men committing public sexual harassment. Clip number two, we can go to this, but like the idea is like, was anybody at any point in this process actually concerned about making a advertisement to actually stop women being harassed? Would this advertisement even do that? And if that was the case, why would you not design it to appeal to the people that are actually harassing women? Let's watch the video. Here is a new propaganda ad demonizing white people in Europe. Let's watch. You see a mixed-race, fuzzy-haired lady. There's a white woman, an Asian woman. Oh, she's being creeped on. Oh, the white woman's being approached when she doesn't want to be. Those damn white guys are at it again. It's the old German man clapping her knee for some reason. It's just, you know, this is what women in Germany have to deal with. Gosh, they're trying to get to their seat, and the you know, innocent minorities have to watch on in horror as the dangerous white supremacist you know, take advantage of the poor innocent women. Thank goodness the minorities are there to stop the white guys. Okay, there's the Hispanic guy, there's the black guy. Thank God, you know. What would these white women do without the racial minorities there to protect them? Defend their honor. You know, these are the real... You say chivalry's dead. Have you seen black people? Have you seen non-white people? They're as chivalrous as the day is long. There it is. Stand up, Von L'Oreal Paris. Now, interestingly, on this very same day, a woman in Germany made a bit of a mistake here. A feminist made a video to demonize men, and she shows herself walking around a European city and being harassed. And boy, is it something. Let's go to clip number 6 here. Here's the feminist video who attempted to demonize men. And it's not men, though, is it? Let's watch. So now every girl's fear. So oh, look, strange foreign men leering at you. Oh, look, a foreign man getting up to try to grab you before jumping off the train. Oh, other foreign men. Oh, look, that guy's got his hand in his pocket, fiddling with himself while he stares at you. Here's a adult man gesturing to the 14-year-old. Oh, you're just sitting by yourself at the back of the bus? Well, nowhere to run. So again, it's literally just brown and black people leering at them, trying to touch them, knocking on their window. Oh, those damn men, right? Yeah, I'm not sure if this expresses what you were thinking it expresses. And we've seen this before, that, you know, another woman did this in New York, where she's like 4 hours walking around. She's walking around in these skin-tight yoga pants, and she literally gets harassed endlessly by minority men. So, what's wrong with women? So, what is wrong with women? It's like, do you not understand what's happening here? Do you not realize that it's your policies that are inviting all of these people in? It's the very people that do the thing that you think all men do? It really is just pathetic. I think we need to do something about this, something dramatic. We'll be right back. I got a couple of longer videos to show you here, but I want to start actually with a short one. I got a lot of videos of Trump, you know, saying that the cost of gasoline is peanuts and, you know, basically we're going to start a new war with Iran or something. I don't know. I mean, it's just all complete nonsense and disrespect to the American people. As always, he rarely says anything else these days. But I thought this exchange was sort of the only video I needed to play today. I think everything about Donald Trump, who he is and what he's doing and what his brain is like, can be explained in this clip. It's clip 33. Donald Trump is asked what his message is to the American families out there that are worried about AI taking their jobs. Now, this is a valid concern because AI is very much taking people's jobs. Meta just laid off thousands of people, replacing them with AI. At the same time, it's not just AI, it's H-1B. Like Amazon just fired 30,000 people and applied for 30,000 H-1B visas because they want to replace the American people with more subservient races. That's actually how it can be phrased. So here's clip 33. This is Donald Trump being asked his message for the American families that don't like AI and don't want AI taking their job or replacing their children. Let's watch.
American families who are scared by the rise of AI. They're worried that their kids are not going to be able to have jobs someday because AI
will take over. Well, I'll tell you, AI's been amazing because right now we have more jobs, more people working right now in the United States by far than we ever had before. And outside of the war, and I assumed the economy was going to go down, the stock market would go down 20-25%. It's actually up. The stock market is higher now than it was before I started the Iran situation. And on the Iran, I had no choice because they were going to have a nuclear weapon. We're not going to give them a nuclear weapon. But that's going to end soon, one way or the other. Oil is going to come tumbling down. There's so much oil. We have 1,600 ships in the strait that are loaded up with oil that are going to be coming out very soon. So we'll have to see. But the military has been unbelievable. The blockade has been infallible. Not one ship has gotten through the blockade. 37 have tried. They all wish they didn't.
Tell us about your call with Erdogan.
Yeah, you were asked about AI, Trump. The question was, what about AI taking people's jobs? Mr. President, what are your comments for families who are scared that AI is going to, you know, leave them unemployed? Well, the Iran war is going great. It's like, first of all, no, it's not. What the hell are you talking about? What? No, we're talking about AI. First of all, we're talking about AI. Second of all, why are you lying about the Iran war? He pivots from a question about AI immediately into lying about the Iran war. It's not even helpful. It's not even the truth. And of course, it's just like, who is this guy? Like, what is going on? Genuinely, what is going on? He's asked about AI taking people's jobs, and his response is, nobody's getting through the Strait of Hormuz. Okay. Great. Great. That's great. Gas Buddy forecasts most expensive summer at the pump in years amid Strait closure. Gas Buddy, the fuel savings platform empowering drivers to choose their road to savings, today released the 2026 Summer Travel Survey results and forecast revealing that American road trip culture is showing resilience even as gas prices surge to levels not seen in years. Gas Buddy forecasts the national average will reach $4.48 per gallon on Memorial Day, up sharply from $3.14 per gallon a year ago, and averaging $4.80 per gallon over the summer from Memorial Day through Labor Day, with the possibility of an all-time high records if the Strait of Hormuz remains closed for a significant portion of the summer. So, hey, but the stock market is up, you guys. Trump's billionaire buddies, the boomers and their retirement funds, they're killing it. They're doing amazing. Sure, gas prices are high, and those prices affect all of the other prices. And inflation continues to be a major and increasing problem for the average American. In fact, food prices these days are twice as much as they were just a few years ago. So those of us, you know, not spending the dividends from our investments, but instead living day to day or hand to mouth, we are suffering. We are cutting back. We are having to pick and choose based on what we can afford. But hey, the stock market is up. The stock market is up. The question is, what does the stock market reflect in actuality? Because it has absolutely nothing to do with the well-being of the American people. It, in fact, seems to be inversely related to the well-being of the American people. It seems like the stock market will always go up because we're an inflationary economy. I don't know how you brag about the stock market going up when everybody is worse off. Everybody's saying that the country's going in the wrong direction. Everybody is dipping into their savings just to make ends meet. What does the stock market mean exactly? What does it reflect? It's literally a bunch of old men tricking each other. That's what the stock market is. I've told the story before. Maybe it's not worth to tell it again, but basically, before I worked at InfoWars, I was doing a contract gig camera operation for Whole Foods. And basically, it was right before Whole Foods was being sold to Amazon. And so they had me set up a fake office with, like, it wasn't real, but they were going to be live streaming it. And it was all a part of this, like, play they were putting on at an investors meeting in New York. And they were going, yeah, we're going to set up a live streaming thing because we're embracing youth culture and we're going to have these new, like, what they were saying they were going to do was create sort of an offshoot of Whole Foods that was called 365 stores, and they were going to be corner stores, like miniaturized Whole Foods, to where, you know, instead of going to the gas station and seeing a bunch of junk, you go to the gas station, you get, you know, a selection of food from Whole Foods. Actually, kind of not a bad idea. And they, in order to launch this, they were like, you know, because we're connecting with the youth, we want to live stream the office that's heading up this project. So, you know, if people are interested, they can tune in and watch the office live. We're bringing, you know, so we can embrace new tech and bring in the youth so that drive us to the store. They never intended to do any of it. The office was totally fake. Nobody worked in it. They had people go in and pretend to work for a little while so that they could go to the investment meeting in New York, turn on the live stream and go, see, we're setting up this new office. We're going to do these 365 stores all over the country. It's a big, you know, push. So invest now and it drives up their stock. They sell it. They never intended to do any of it. It's literally play acting. They literally paid for me to set up an office, to set up a live stream. And the only thing they were using it for was a 30-minute investment meeting. And then they scrapped the whole thing. They never intended to do it anyway. It's literally just a bunch of people lying to each other. And I'm sure the people at the investment meeting knew it was BS. But it's all just smoke and mirrors. That's literally what, like, our economy is run on. Is a bunch of old men just tricking each other and lying to each other about what they intend to do to artificially increase the stock price before cashing out, dipping out, and leaving us to pick up the pieces. That's what the stock market is at the end of the day. I'm telling you this from firsthand experience. This is literally what they did to sell Whole Foods to Amazon. And at the same time, my friends were getting fired from Whole Foods and were very confused at why they had just hired a new female editor when they were firing the perfectly good editor. And I had to explain to them, it's because you're a white guy. They're trying to sell Whole Foods, and there's this thing called ESG, where the more diverse people they have, the more their company is worth somehow. So yeah, they fired the skilled, like, you know, well-known, the like editors and the behind-the-scenes guys that had years of experience, were very good at their jobs. They fired them to bring in new people who were chosen because of their gender and race, because that's good for business, apparently. It's only good for business because BlackRock and Larry Fink increase the amount they invest in you if you comply to their anti-white agenda. The stock market's up. Great deal. Great. Wonderful. So it's really the worst. It's really the most, like, disrespectful thing ever. And again, the change from Donald Trump, it is only explained by him being simultaneously blackmailed and rewarded by the Jewish lobby for service to them. So I guess they benefit from the stock market, I assume. Trump blurts stunning gas price rant amid sinking polls. President Donald Trump blurted out a stunning dismissal of pain at the pump as his approval rating sinks, telling reporters this is peanuts, and he doesn't even think about it. The president spoke to reporters on Tuesday morning against the backdrop of massive and cacophonous East Wing construction project and took questions for about 45 minutes. In one exchange, he praised CNN's Harry Enten, not long after Enten delivered a breathless report on a new round of sinking approval ratings, all in the 30s. But that didn't stop Trump from delivering a new version after of the gaffe he uncorked before his China trip, insisting he doesn't even think about gas prices in his pursuit of victory in Iran for Israel. So, yeah. So, you know, again, what is there to say other than our country is being controlled by people who despise us? America's being sacrificed in pursuit of Israeli aims, and the Republican Party in particular is being sacrificed in pursuit of these aims. So they will empower the left to do whatever they want in revenge for the perceived outrages of Donald Trump against Trump and us. And I don't think any agreement that Trump makes is going to forestall that whatsoever. So he's really just sold us all out, sold us all down the river. And that's really undeniable following the Thomas Massie defeat. Meanwhile, speaking of, you know, AI, right? Weren't we speaking about AI? Sorry. We were talking about AI stealing jobs. We got distracted about Iran for some reason. Standard Charter to replace lower value human capital with AI. This is from Sky News. This is the UK report, and the UK government is officially using the label low value human capital to describe, you know, poor people, people who work with their hands, the people that I guess are going to be first on the chopping block for the dehumanization program because they can be replaced by robots easily. Standard Chartered Bank would cut more than 7,500 jobs as it seeks to replace, quote, lower value human capital under technology and artificial intelligence drive. The London-based but Asia-focused bank, Giant, said that it was going to axe more than 15% of back office roles by 2030 in favor of increased automation and adoption of new technologies, including AI. Standard Chartered, which also has corporate offices in Chennai, Bengaluru, Shenzhen, and Warsaw, did not divulge the location of where the jobs would be lost, but said those affected have a chance to be retained under a retaining program. The bank has a total global staff of nearly 82,000. So they're cutting about a tenth of their staff, and they're doing it by cutting the, quote, lower value human capital. So expect a lot more language like that as human beings are slated for extinction, basically, and AI will be used to make up the difference. Again, the way they're doing this is so rapacious, it's horrifying. This is concerning and affecting all Texans. With a mad dash for AI data centers popping up all over Texas, our water is being targeted. Rural well owners, pay attention to what Texas legislature is planning. The 2027 draft of the Texas Water Plan makes one thing very clear. Texas is preparing for massive future water demand, and groundwater is a major target. Now it's your turn to stand up and have your voices heard. The state is openly discussing groundwater development, streamlining permitting, desalinization, aquifer storage, AI data center demand, expanding infrastructure projects. They're projecting nearly $174 billion in future water infrastructure needs. What does this mean for the rural communities? It means places with strong aquifers, open land, and private wells are increasingly being looked at for large-scale groundwater production and export projects. Many people still think they can't take our water. Well, once contracts, pipelines, permits, and investors get involved, things change quickly. Right now, the state is accepting public comment on the draft 2027 state water plan. This is one of the few chances rural Texans have to get concerns officially on the record. The public hearing is May 27th, 2026, Stephen F. Austin Building, 1700 North Congress Avenue, Austin, Texas. How to speak up. Submit written comments to the Texas Water Development Board before May 29th. Attend the public hearing in person or online. Contact your state representatives and groundwater district officials. Ask questions about groundwater export projects in your area. Educate your neighbors and fellow landowners. If you care about your private well, water quality, aquifer depletion, agriculture, future generations, now is the time to speak up, because once these projects are built, it's a whole lot harder to stop them. You can see there's this massive sort of trans-Texas aquifer, and it's exactly where all of the data centers are going to be drawing the water from. Again, I've been saying this for months and months and months and probably years at this point, but really stop to think about the fact that our fertility is below replacement level. The number of people that are being born is significantly less than the number of people dying every year, and yet we're building houses at such a rate, we are already emptying aquifers and draining lakes across the entire country. You would think, like, it really seems like there is a natural push-pull that just God engineered into society, where it's like, as you start to, you know, improve life expectancy and babies survive until adulthood and adult people live until their 70s and 80s, it actually makes sense that you'd have a corresponding drop in fertility. That would actually keep it even. It would actually keep it balanced. If you have, you know, kids dying constantly before they're 10 years old 100 years ago, and now practically everybody survives until they're 10, then okay, you only have to have two kids instead of five because all, you know, all your kids survive. There's a little, like, kind of balance that happens. You know, it's like that meme that goes around. I think it was Roman Helmet Guy on X, where he said during the Black Death, you know, people in Scotland, half the population died. But unfortunately, at the time, the technology didn't exist to replace all of those people with foreigners. So sadly, wages tripled. You know, they had to pay people a lot more because the amount of people that could work was a lot less. So the people could demand a lot more for their wages. Like, there's always this kind of balance. But then you come in and interject some unnatural intervention in that, and it makes everything go insane. So, like, if the American population was just at, you know, replacement level, that'd be fine. We wouldn't need to bring anybody in, except that we have a Social Security system that was set up deliberately as a Ponzi scheme that requires infinite growth. If you don't have infinite growth to pay into your Ponzi scheme Social Security, then you have to be having kids, you have to be fertile, and if you're not, then you have to bring people in from outside. But when they don't actually put into the pension fund or pay into Social Security and instead go on welfare, everything gets retarded. So that's sort of where we're at now, where they're building these data centers all across America, draining the water. We are, like, running out of water. We are destroying the natural world at a time when our population isn't even growing. why are we so rapaciously, so like hungrily devouring our natural resources when our people can't even enjoy their life? Like, it's genuinely a plan. It's a plot. It's on purpose. It's by design. And now they're going to tell you that it's always been like this. Actually, everybody's always struggled to make ends meet. It's not that we had the most prosperous time ever. It's not that we are the recipients, the inheritors of the most powerful, the most prosperous country in the history of the world, and that we can, you know, expect a little bit more out of our country. You've got people like Kevin O'Leary, I think it was him, billionaire, going on and basically blaming, going, hey, millennials eat out, you know, eat lunch out at restaurants. That's why they're poor. It's like, we're the United States of America. There are Somalis in our country that are getting $80 million a year for nothing. We should be the richest people in the history of the world. We shouldn't really, no American should struggle. Like, no American should have to struggle. No American should have to worry about living paycheck to paycheck. No American should, you know, be struggling to buy a new house. It's only this way because people like Kevin O'Leary have made it this way, have designed our economy to be utterly retarded and not serve the American people whatsoever, but serve them instead. And then they want to talk about $15 lunches like that's the issue. As if, you know, you could afford a house if you only had, what would that be, $3,000, $4,000 a year? Gosh, if you'd only saved $4,000 a year, you'd have a $500,000 house by now. You know, a one-bedroom, crappy, rundown thing on the edge of town in the dangerous neighborhood that inexplicably cost $250,000. You know, you just have to save up for, I mean, what would that be? 20 years, 30, 50. Okay, so yeah, even if you save $15 a day, every day, for a year, that's not really all that much. Actually, I think we have a lot bigger problems than any of this. Again, it's like recycling. It's like, okay, you put a plastic cup in a green bin and you think you did something. These little individual acts of like saving money for lunch, it's not going to solve the giant systemic issue of our entire economy being purposefully sculpted to funnel money into billionaires and out of the middle class, because they don't want people to be middle class. They don't want people to be able to rise between classes. They want everybody ground down to the bare minimum. They want everybody living at poverty level. It's their weapon. They want you overworked, underpaid, desperate, just trying to get, you know, food on your plate. $5,500, $5,500 in a single year. So you could have a down payment in a decade. Look at that. So just be miserable. I don't know. I love going out to eat. It's one of the few joys in my life. But, you know, you don't deserve joy. You don't deserve to sink your teeth into a hot and juicy cheeseburger at lunch. You should just eat cold cuts, right? Just, you know, you should be eating raw broccoli with nothing to dip it in. And you should be thankful for the opportunity. And all you have to do is live like that for 10 years. And then maybe you can scrape together enough for a down payment on a lower end house in the bad part of town. There you go. Problem solved. The economy is great. It's wonderful. You just can't go on vacations for that time. And, you know, again, be miserable. Because why should you enjoy your life? Why should you eat food at a restaurant? What are you, a billionaire? This is America. We don't eat food in restaurants. We split a single slice of bread between the three of us, and we thank Kevin O'Leary for the opportunity, okay? And then we drop $100 million on a war for Israel and Iran, and then we drop another $100 billion for Somali scammers. And then, you know, there's nothing left over, unfortunately. I'm sure there's other stuff our government could be doing in terms of, you know, protecting our livelihood, trying to increase the birth rate in just any way at all. But that's all too expensive. Now, we spent our last $20 billion on a Somali daycare, so that's all we get now. Yeah, maybe it won't be that long. Hell, the world has 6 months to avert a major food crisis, says the UN as Hormuz struggle drags on. So, you know, maybe we're only 6 months. Maybe in 6 months, all of this stuff will seem like quaint concerns, not having enough money, not being able to afford houses. That'll all be, you know, pie in the sky fantasy world once we're struggling to literally eat or have water for our families while fighting with tens of millions of foreign people that are on our soil and competing with us for resources. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Epstein class. That's about going to be it for us today. Again, I got more videos, but it's all basically the same. It's all basically the same stuff over and over. You can just close your eyes and just imagine, you know, black people murdering white people and white people being punished for it. That's basically all the videos I have, so no need to go to them. You understand it all now. Again, want to remind you that we have just come out with these awesome new Freedom Shield wallets at thealexjonesstore.com. You can get them today. Two powerful patriotic designs, Don't Tread on Me in 1776. It's made with leather, top grain leather, and aerospace-grade aluminum. It's slim, strong, secure, and built for everyday carry. Obviously, it has the RFID blocker in it, so people with these little scanners can't get your card number. If you use the tap function of your card like I do, you're going to want an RFID blocking wallet, and this is the best one on the market. You can get it for 30% off right now at thealexjonesstore.com. I have a feeling these things are going to sell out pretty quick, so go today, thealexjonesstore.com. Get one of these awesome wallets. It would make great gifts for the graduate in your family, or a birthday, or for yourself, thealexjonesstore.com.